You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
The Flight Attendants Union filed a federal lawsuit against Northwest Airlines on Tuesday for refusing to come to the bargaining table if employees were present. The Professional Flight Attendants Association is charging Northwest with violating the Railway Labor Act by keeping observers out of contract talks. Northwest is asking for major wage and benefit concessions, similar to an agreement signed by the Pilots Union in November. In that labor deal, the Airline Pilots Association took a 15% pay cut.
The strike against the Youngstown, Ohio newspaper is about to enter its eighth week with no sign that the paper's management is willing to negotiate. The 171 workers who are currently picketing the Youngstown Vindicator seeking better wages, working conditions, and health care benefits have found a great deal of support from the community.
We've had a lot of support, including a resolution supporting the Vindicator newspaper employees' strike, which was passed by a vote of 7-0 by Youngstown City Council 2 weeks ago.
Deborah Chalice-Flora is vice president of the Youngstown Newspaper Guild. The striking workers see the support of the community in the print run of the Valley Voice, an alternative weekly paper started by the workers. The Voice currently has reached a print run of 51,000. In comparison, the Vindicator has a daily print run of 65,000. Also, neighboring towns have also begun to show support. A councilman in Warren, Ohio, publicly burned his Vindicator subscription card and vowed to bring a resolution supporting the workers to that city's council. Flora says that the union is ready to come back to the bargaining table when the paper expresses an interest in negotiating.
We don't have any talks scheduled at this time. We stand ready to bargain, though. It takes two sides to do the bargaining, and we've already told the company that we're willing to meet with them whenever, wherever.
Unions from around the world have reached out to help victims of the devastating December 26 tsunami. As the death toll climbs past 80,000 people, relief agencies are trying to halt the spread of communicable diseases threatening survivors. Transport workers in India have agreed to donate one day's pay and 100 workers to assist in relief measures. Also in India, the Southern Railway Union is distributing food, clothing, and medicine. The Swedish Metal Workers Union is donating $1 million and urging unions in the United States to do the same.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. After 30 years of improvement, leading indicators show a worsening environmental trend over the last 4 years. Statistics show that civil citations issued to polluters fell 57%. Criminal pollution prosecutions dropped 17%. Cleanups of toxic waste down by 52%. Fish consumption warnings for rivers doubled. Beach closing up 26%. Asthma attacks increased by 6%. On the bright side, greenhouse gas emissions were reduced by 0.5%. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Let me tell you a story of progressive progress. In 1939, two-thirds of America's senior citizens lived their golden years in cold, hard poverty. Just a decade later, that percentage was down to half. By 1959, it was only one-third, and today the number is less than 10%. That's progress. What's progressive about it is that this decline in poverty is the result of the New Deal's passage of our nation's landmark Social Security program. Yes, the very same program now under attack by Wall Street wolves and congressional opportunists of both parties who insist that Social Security is doomed to failure and facing an imminent financial crisis. Horse duties. First, this is a program that actually works, providing the modicum of income so our gray-haired citizens have a basic level of decent living when their earning years are over. Second, Social Security is a model of efficiency, requiring only a single percent in administrative costs. Compare that to the insurance corporations that suck out one-third of our health care dollars to pay for their corporate bureaucracies, executive salaries, marble palaces, and advertising. But no, cry the chicken littlers, Social Security is going broke. Hogwash. Without changing anything, Social Security is financially sound for the next 40 years. Name me a corporation that can claim that. Yet the Bushites, on behalf of Wall Street finaglers, seek to privatize this public treasure, pushing people to put their Social Security nest egg into the stock market. Hello. These are the same investment geniuses who only 3 years ago would have advised you to invest in Enron, a stock that fell from $97 a share to 57 cents in only 1 year. This is Jim Hightower saying, I say no one should be allowed to reform Social Security unless they actually need it.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Happy Thursday, the 30th of December. Just closing in on the end of the year here. Tomorrow will be our last program for 2004. Yesterday on the program, I mentioned the possibility that the increased earthquake and other tectonic-type activities that we've been seeing around the world over the last 20, 30 years, and particularly the last decade, may have something to do with the fact that we have been sucking water and oil out of the earth at absolutely unprecedented rates and not always replacing them. The sinkholes in Florida, of course, from sucking up water out of the freshwater aquifers in Florida, the most obvious and famous example. But similar things happening all over the country, ground level falling. What surprised me, frankly, was a number of people called in during the show and said, not only you're crazy. Not only did they not say that, but they said it makes perfect sense, and maybe there's even more to it than that. And then this morning, when we were doing show prep, we came across this article from Independent Media TV. www.independent-media.tv by Andrew Lindbergh, who is the founder and editor of independentmediatv.tv. And he takes it even a step farther, makes some interesting suggestions. I thought I would just bring him on the program. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. And where are you located right now?
Tallahassee, Florida.
Tallahassee, Florida. Okay, great. And just wanted to get you on the show and have you share your thoughts with us about what might be causing this stuff.
Go ahead. Yeah, I want to first start out by saying that I'm not an expert on seismology or anything along those lines, but I just came across a series of reports that seem to be coincidental, and I thought it was important to bring them to light so that those who are experts can at least look into it. I'd say the first thing that I noticed was I was reading a story about how there were some whale beachings in New Zealand on the 30th, and it referred back to a report of whale beachings on November 28th, and an Australian senator, this was off the coast of Tasmania, between Tasmania and New Zealand, and these whale beachings occurred on the 28th of November as well, over 150.
This just a month ago, more or less.
Exactly. And an Australian senator had stated that they were doing some seismic testing in the area for oil exploration.
One of the ways that they explore for oil on land is they will drill down, you know, a fair distance, a few hundred yards, sometimes even as much as a quarter or half a mile, and drop some explosives down there, and then they'll have seismic meters
for miles, you know, hundreds of miles around. And then they create a computer map of the reflections of the explosion waves. And that map will show them if there's oil in there, because oil reacts to motion differently than rock does. Is that the sort of thing that they were doing underwater in this area that this earthquake happened?
In a sense, kind of the way it was described to me is that they have like an air gun that sends off a sonar burst of 200, sometimes 200 to 230 decibels.
Mm-hmm.
These are shot off every 10 seconds or so, 24 hours a day for like a two-week period of time.
Hmm.
The way it was described to me, I contacted a geologist, and the way it was described to me was that imagine lifting up a dump truck full of dirt and dropping the truck down on the ground, and that would be the kind of impact you're talking about every 10 seconds. Now, it's important to mention that the two geologists that I spoke to on this mentioned that they felt that it was highly unlikely that this type of activity could cause that, but there is evidence of other oil exploration activities, some of which we've mentioned, that have been shown to have impact on inducing an earthquake.
Right, they're causing faults to slip and things like that, just a certain amount of sense to it. So this is really interesting. They were exploring for oil. In fact, the headline of your article is Coincidence, Earthquake, Coincidence or a Corporate Oil Tragedy?
Mm.
And that they were exploring for oil in this area about a month ago. They were shooting these very, very high-powered sonic blasts down. They were so intense that hundreds of marine mammals were beaching themselves, presumably at the very least, their inner ears, their sense of balance and hearing had been wiped out, destroyed by these, if not other internal organs. And then we see earthquakes, and thus a tsunami. And you're speculatively putting two and two together. Where do we go from here?
Well, it's very speculative, and I'd like to make a little bit of a clarification. The major whale beachings occurred 30 days ago.
30 days
and
ago.
As far as continued, I believe that there was continued seismic activity. At this point, I'd like to investigate who's doing it, what kind of activities they're doing. But what the interesting thing that happened was is that 2 days prior to the 9.0 earthquake that we're all very familiar with, 2 days prior to that, there was an 8.1 in this area between Tasmania and New Zealand.
Right.
And the plate, for the Australian plate, is connected to the India plate and the Burma plate, and the intersection of those three tectonic plates is exactly the point where the 9.0 occurred 2 days later after the 8.1 in Australia.
And how does this relate to the oil exploration seismic activities in that same area?
Well, that's the thing. I'm not an expert on seismic activity. I wanted to get this information out there so that those who are experts can take it to the next level.
Yeah.
I'm also doing some follow-up and trying to get some more information and trying to find out which companies are doing exploration, what type of activities they're performing in the area, just so that we can stay on top of this and eliminate it as a possibility. I mean, it could be nothing, but, you know, it's quite coincidental.
Yeah, it's and given the interlocking boards of directors between our major media news organizations in the United States and the major oil companies in the United States, if this is a corporate oil tragedy, it's unlikely you're going to hear about it on the major network news, I would think.
Well, that's really, I'm glad you brought that up, because it reminded me, that's one thing that's really interesting about this whole thing. How many of the listeners have heard about the 8.1 earthquake off the coast of Australia on the 23rd of December? It's not being reported on. And anyone who follows the media the way we do, we know that when things are not being reported on, sometimes there's something to it. And I just can't understand. It seems to me if I was doing a story on this tragedy, I'd say this was the buildup. There was an 8.1 in Australia, and then 2 days later at the intersection of the Australia, you know, you'd work your way into it that way. But
yeah,
there's no focus on the earthquake in Australia. And 8.1 out of, I mean, there's not.
That's not a small earthquake.
You don't really hear about 8.1 earthquakes too frequently.
Yeah, it's not a small earthquake, particularly given that the Richter scale is a logarithmic, not a linear scale.
Exactly.
We're speaking with Andrew Lindbergh of Independent Media TV, independent-media.tv. Also, Bob Brown, a senator in the Australian Parliament, said that sound bombing or seismic tests of ocean floors to test for oil and gas had been carried out near the sites of the Tasmanian mammal beachings, the whale and and what are the other kinds of mammals that have been beaching themselves?
The dolphins.
Dolphins. There you go. Whales and dolphins in that area. And interesting. It does 2 plus 2 equal 4? Good question. Well, you're going to be following up on this, Andrew?
I'm working on it. I hope I can get some more information. I'm having a little trouble finding any, but if there's anybody who would like to, who has any knowledge and or like to assist in this, as far as gathering the knowledge, feel free to send me an email at editor@independent-media.tv.
Okay.
And we can go move forward on this.
Great. And if you find anything out, will you let us know?
Most definitely.
You have our contact information now. So.
Yes, I do.
Great. Thank you very much. Andrew Lindberg, Independent Media TV, independent-media.tv.
And, thank you very much.
Thanks, Andrew. I appreciate it. It'd be very interesting to see how this thing plays, if this thing plays out. Another in the context of the same thing. Did animals sense the tsunami? The Associated Press reports from Colombo, Sri Lanka, a place I have visited, by the way. The last time I was in Colombo was a long time ago. The insurgency was just starting up in Kandy, the Tamil Tigers. And so it must have been, 83? Anyway, it's been a long time. But wildlife officials in Sri Lanka expressed surprise Wednesday that they found no evidence of large-scale animal deaths from the tsunamis, indicating that animals may have sensed the wave coming and fled to higher ground. An Associated Press photographer who flew over Sri Lanka's Yala National Park in an Air Force helicopter saw abundant wildlife, including elephants, buffalo, deer, and not one single animal corpse. Whatever we may think is true, maybe what we think is true, he says, is that animals have a sixth sense. Or maybe that we all have a sixth sense and that we've just gotten so preoccupied with TV and Coca-Cola that we have lost our connection to our sixth sense. How's that for a little? Is that new age or is that just, maybe that's even hard science. Who knows? Dave in Ozark, Mississippi is on the line. Our number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894. Dave, what are your thoughts on this?
Hi. I'm so glad to be able to listen to you down here. This is Ozark, Missouri. Actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I just wanted to say I just heard you talking to the gentleman, and I just wanted to mention that in the Springfield News Leader, I think it was an AP report, they did report about the Tasmanian earthquake or Australian earthquake on Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm. Did they report about the mammal beachings and the oil company exploration and the sonic blasts that were going on in that area?
No, they didn't. And I had not heard of that.
Yeah, I wonder
they
how
did
much
report the other quake.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is going on around the world. I know that there has been a big flap about the Navy using these high-powered sonar devices that have caused whales to beach off the coast of Puerto Rico and in the South Atlantic, but. Or in the southern half of the northern hemisphere part of the Atlantic. I had not heard about oil companies using underwater blast to test for, but it makes perfect sense. Just makes perfect sense.
It really speaks to the arrogance that we would do that to creatures we know virtually nothing about.
Yeah. And just for oil, this is another example of why we have to stop this insane policy of being addicts and pretending we're not to other people's oil. Or even to our own oil, for that matter, and look at the alternatives, particularly now that we know that solar power and wind power are sufficiently advanced, that we can actually supply all of the energy needs of the United States right now between solar, wind, and geothermal. And this is not speculation. It's a fact. And I still get emails from people who are otherwise knowledgeable, and they say, well, solar power isn't quite ready for prime time. There's enough wind power in six states in the United States to supply all the energy needs of the United States, given current technology. Solar cells, and I mean, there's Sanyo, I believe it is, and now British Petroleum, are manufacturing roofing tiles. And pretty much anybody who lives south of the Mason-Dixon line can roof their house, and this will pay off in 10 years. I mean, you can just put it into your mortgage, and after 10 years, all your electricity is free, and for those 10 years, it's about the same cost as regular electricity when you amortize it.
I'm trying to work up the nerve to tell my wife I want to do that.
There you go. I mean, it's, Home Power Magazine. I used to subscribe to this thing. It's got all this information in it. Dave, I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. We got to move along here. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman. People who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
This January, it's the return of cable's most talked about show, Growing Up Gotti. It all starts at 9.
Did my ex-husband send you here? Just drive me crazy.
Followed by the new real-life series, Caesars 24-7. An all-access, behind-the-scenes pass to Sin City's hottest casino, Caesars Palace.
Sometimes people hook up at the table.
Growing Up Gotti premieres at 9, 8 Central, followed by the new real-life series, Caesars 24-7. This January. Only on A&E.
I just won $1 million!
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Give me some shelter here. Welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Sending liberals out to the water cooler wars with all the intellectual body armor you need. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. TomHartman.com, our website, if you want to drop into the chat room. Folks in chat room remind me of the HARP program.
I had forgotten the acronym, H-A-R-P, or maybe it's A-H-A-A-R-P, whatever it is. Well, that's the Association Retired. Anyhow, HARP is the underwater sonar Navy kill whales thing that's been going on. A lot of controversy around that. Some folks discussing that. 1-866-889-8894. Ben in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Ben, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. Not to throw cold water on your first caller with his concept that the sonar may have something to do with the earthquakes, but as an engineer, the energy required to do something like trigger an earthquake is so much bigger than the amount of energy they put into the water with such a sonar experiment. We're talking the difference between, you know, between giving something a good shove and dropping a bomb on it.
I understand, Ben, but what if you had a situation where it's funny. I'm looking out the window here, and there is a little mouse sitting right outside, in the outdoors, sitting there, going through the leaves, the old dead. This is incredible. Here in the snow in Vermont, life is all around us. Anyhow, pardon my distraction. He's the cutest little thing with great big ears. What if, and he's outdoors. What if you? There's the old, the straw that broke the camel's back theory. What if you have pressure built up to the point where it's almost ready to go? I mean, isn't there a theoretical point where a feather would be enough to do it?
Yeah, there's a point where, where dropping a hammer on the floor will trigger something, too.
Yeah.
The strain builds up and builds up. But the question is, why now? Why? And if there is, in fact, an answer to why now. And the answer is deglaciation. As the glaciers melt,
removing the weight from some land masses changing. Yeah, okay.
Changes the buoyancy of the land masses first of all. Ice weighs down a land mass, and when you remove the ice, the land mass rises. In fact, the Scandinavian countries get about an inch taller every year.
As a result of deglaciation.
As a result
of... Are you familiar, Ben, with Nikola Tesla's experiments with his little thumper? Do you know about his thumper?
Yes, I have. And at one point in time, I tried to replicate that and got no interesting results.
Well, nobody's been able to do it since he died, but he actually demonstrated it a couple of times, and at least once, I believe. And what he developed this little thing about the size, three times the size of a pack of cigarettes. It just went tap, 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 tap. And if he could figure out the resonant frequency of a building, and that was the critical part, he had to calculate the resonant frequency of the building, put this thing on it, and just tap, 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 tap it. After a few hours or a few days, all of a sudden, the building would just crash down because it was the resonant frequency. Well, these sonic blasts are not just occasional things where it's just a matter of, mass versus or inertia or whatever versus resistance. These are repetitive over time.
Right.
So it's conceivable that they may have accidentally hit on the resonant frequency of the fault.
I wouldn't rule it out. But I really believe that because glaciation makes sense for a couple of reasons. One is because it unburdens the land masses and they rise. The other is, you know how you have to have your car tires spin balanced?
Right.
That's because any rotating thing with a weight out of place is going to wobble.
Right.
The earth wobbles. Now, when you start deglaciating preferentially one hemisphere or one side of the earth over another, what is happening,
right.
You get a change in the wobble.
So this brings us all back to global warming.
Yes. In fact, there's a graph that plots 2.5 magnitude earthquakes against CO2 in the air, and it matches.
Incredible. Incredible. Ben, thanks for that information.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the tip and for calling. It's fascinating. CO2 and earthquakes, who would have thought? But it makes perfect sense. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller. The Flight Attendants Union filed a federal lawsuit against Northwest Airlines on Tuesday for refusing to come to the bargaining table if employees were present. The Professional Flight Attendants Association is charging Northwest with violating the Railway Labor Act by keeping observers out of contract talks. Northwest is asking for major wage and benefit concessions similar to an agreement signed by the Pilots Union in November. In that labor deal, the Airline Pilots Association took a 15% pay cut.
The strike against the Youngstown, Ohio newspaper is about to enter its eighth week with no sign that the paper's management is willing to negotiate. The 171 workers who are currently picketing the Youngstown Vindicator seeking better wages, working conditions, and health care benefits have found a great deal of support from the community.
We've had a lot of support, including a resolution supporting the Vindicator newspaper employee strike, which was passed by a vote of 7-0 by Youngstown City Council 2 weeks ago.
Deborah Shalas Flora is vice president of the Youngstown Newspaper Guild. The striking workers see the support of the community in the print run of the Valley Voice, an alternative weekly paper started by the workers. The Voice currently has reached a print run of 51,000. In comparison, the Vindicator has a daily print run of 65,000. Also, neighboring towns have also begun to show support. A councilman in Warren, Ohio, publicly burned his Vindicator subscription card and vowed to bring a resolution supporting the workers to that city's council. Flora says that the union is ready to come back to the bargaining table when the paper expresses an interest in negotiating.
We don't have any talks scheduled at this time. We stand ready to bargain, though. It takes two sides to do the bargaining, and we've already told the company that we're willing to meet with them whenever, wherever.
Unions from around the world have reached out to help victims of the devastating December 26 tsunami. As the death toll climbs past 80,000 people, relief agencies are trying to halt the spread of communicable diseases threatening survivors. Transport workers in India have agreed to donate one day's pay and 100 workers to assist in relief measures. Also in India, the Southern Railway Union is distributing food, clothing, and medicine. The Swedish Metalworkers Union is donating $1 million and urging unions in the United States to do the same.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. After 30 years of improvement, leading indicators show a worsening environmental trend over the last 4 years. Statistics show that civil citations issued to polluters fell 57%. Criminal pollution prosecutions dropped 17%. Cleanups of toxic waste down by 52%. Fish consumption warnings for rivers doubled. Beach closing up 26%. Asthma attacks increased by 6%. On the bright side, greenhouse gas emissions were reduced by 0.5%. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Are we stingy? George Bush says no. We beg to differ, says the New York Times in an editorial today. Mr. Eglin was right on target, write the editorial writers of the Times. We hope Secretary of State Colin Powell was privately embarrassed when 2 days into a catastrophic disaster that hit 12 of the world's poorer countries and will cost billions of dollars to ameliorate. He held a press conference to say that America, the world's richest nation, would contribute $15 million. That's less than half of what Republicans plan to spend on the Bush inaugural festivities. They go on to point out that according to a poll, most Americans believe the United States spends 24% of its budget on aid to poor countries. It actually spends under a quarter of 1%. Making things worse, the Times notes, we often pledge more money than we actually deliver. Victims of the earthquake in Bam, Iran a year ago are still living in tents because aid, including ours, has not materialized in the amounts pledged. And back in 2002... running up to the election, Mr. Bush, Mr. Bush announced his Millennium Challenge account to give African countries development assistance of up to $5 billion a year. Remember that? We're going to give $5 billion. The account has yet to disperse a single dollar. Walter Brash, professor of journalism at Bloomsburg University. His latest book, America's Patriotic Acts, The Federal Government's Violation of Constitutional Civil Rights, wrote an op-ed piece on this topic today, President Bush's appropriate response. He talks about how Bush, vacationing in his ranch at Crawford, Texas, how can you call something a ranch if the guy's afraid of horses and therefore he has no horses on it? It used to be a pig farm. Now it's more of a garden, let's say. Well, in any case, we'll call it a ranch. Anyhow, vacationing on his ranch, made no public, and plus he's always cutting bush. President George W. Bush, vacationing on a ranch, made no public comment. His press office, however, released condolences. On Monday, no word from Bush, although German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder had cut his vacation to return to Berlin. Finally, on Tuesday, the president bicycled and continued to clear brush from his ranch, said nothing to the American public. Although his press secretary made a gratuitous comment, he said, George W. Bush doesn't want to make a symbolic statement about we feel your pain. This was just, he said, 3 days in a row, he said nothing about what's going on in the mostly Muslim, very poor Southeast Asia. And he uses the opportunity to take a gratuitous slap at Bill Clinton. I mean, how sick is this? How low is this, let's say? And finally, the United States is not stingy, Colin Powell, the outgoing Secretary of State. There was no mention that the Bush administration a week earlier proposed cutting back its contribution to the World Food Bank. Nevertheless, following England's challenge, the United States announced it would donate another $20 million in food aid for a total of $35 million. By then, Canada, with a population of about 11% that of the U.S. and a gross domestic product 6% of the U.S., had already pledged $33 million. Let's see, proportionally, that's about 10 times what we have. Spain, with a population of 1/7 that of the U.S. and a GDP 6% of the U.S., pledged $68 million. Twice that initially committed by the U.S. Australia, with a population 7%, GDP 4% of the United States, pledged $20 million. Japan, with a population 2/5 of the U.S., GDP of half the U.S., pledged $40 million. The U.K., with a population 1/5 and a GDP of 13% of the U.S., pledged $40 million. France, 1/5 the size of the United States, population-wise, GDP 1/10 of the U.S., pledged $27 million. Also responding quickly with statements by their leaders coupled with financial and humanitarian assistance were dozens of other countries. Israel contributed millions and pledged a 150-member medical team. Other countries have been shipping thousands of tons of relief supplies. International aid organizations believe more than $14 billion will be needed for humanitarian assistance, much of it donated by individuals and corporations. On the third day, Wednesday, after the earthquake and resulting tsunami, with the death toll approaching 70,000, expected to rise more to above 100,000, with more than 2 million expected to be homeless, with substantial health and sanitation problems for those who lived, and with millions now questioning why America's president still hadn't spoken out or committed more resources, George W. Bush finally held a news conference at his ranch. "Laura and I and the American people are shocked and we are saddened," said the president. Blah-de-blah-de-blah. With more than 125,000 uniformed military personnel in Iraq, perhaps another 15,000 in Afghanistan, and the Reserve's National Guard stretched so thin that tours of duty in Iraq have been irrevocably extended, the possibility of a massive American presence in the affected countries by anyone other than civilians is minimal. Nonetheless, our wartime president says, "We will prevail over this destruction." This guy's got a mindset of conquer, right? Everything has to be conquered. Everything has to be prevailed over. When he was a kid in school, with that little box, plays well with others, they unchecked that and replaced it with prevails well over others. Right? And the previous year, the U.S. Agency for International Development provided about $2.4 billion for humanitarian relief. Although much of that was for Afghanistan and Iraq,
President Bush believes the United States might provide as much as $1 billion in cash in kind donations. This is worldwide to assist the nations hit by natural disasters in more than four decades. That $1 billion, however, would be 0.5% of what is planned for the war in Iraq, and includes the cost of maintaining the U.S. Abraham Lincoln in the Indian Ocean. Now, this is not to say $25 billion is not, or million is nothing, and that we shouldn't have given it, but it's, you know, what, about 4 hours of what we're spending in Iraq? I want to repeat again the aid agencies that I have personal knowledge of and think highly of, recommend you consider contacting. The American Friends Service Committee, AFSC.org. Doctors Without Borders, which is www.doctorswithoutborders.org. All run together, of course. And Oxfam America, oxfamamerica.org. Excellent agencies. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Glenn, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I was watching a Science Channel show on, you know, the big discoveries of 2004, and global warming came up, and there's some new information that relates here. They were saying there's no longer, we finally have evidence, there is no longer any excuse for saying there's no global warming. It's a fact. And they also are saying they know now that this gradual progression is going to change to a rapid warming that may not be stoppable. It may just snowball into something we can't handle, and they're recommending a Manhattan-type project to see how quickly we can get a bunch of CO2 out of the air.
Right,
and the only place to store it, the only bank we have is the ocean, which is already holding about 50% of the extra CO2 that we have.
Oh, it's holding a lot more than that. You've got these hydrate crystals, carbon hydrates, that are on the seafloor bed, where you basically it's like frozen carbon dioxide sort of thing. It's not just carbon dioxide; it's more like frozen methane. But the thing that is scaring the bejesus out of hydronomists or whatever you call ocean scientists is that these things are suspended because of the temperature of the deep cold waters, and it's hundreds of trillions of tons of carbon locked up in these methane crystals. And if the ocean warms a little bit, nobody knows exactly what that threshold is. If it warms a little bit, this stuff is going to start bubbling up. It's called the soda pop theory. It's going to start redissolving back into the water. And all this carbon dioxide, and methane will bubble up to the surface and go into the atmosphere, and you will see an incredible and rapid spike. And we'll be back where we were during the Carboniferous period before these methane hydrates got frozen in the water and put back down, you know, stored away. We're talking 300 million years ago when the climate of the Earth was not exactly friendly for human habitation.
Now, one final nail in the coffin is a new thing I hadn't heard of, which is coal burning especially, but things that put sulfur compounds into the air are actually making the vapor droplets smaller, which means they don't rain as much. So it's even though it's warmer, there's less rain because these vapor droplets with the sulfur in there are being smaller, so they don't fall as easily.
Right, and the biggest consequence of that is not drought, although that is a consequence of it. The biggest consequence of that is that the atmosphere can then hold more moisture, and water vapor is actually a more effective holder of heat, that is a more effective greenhouse gas,
right,
than is carbon dioxide.
Yeah, I just thought I'd pass that on.
Yeah, this is it's what's called a positive feedback system. It's not a good thing. See, a negative feedback system, it's like, you know, you're the thermostat in your house. It detects that it's cold, it turns on the furnace, it gets up to a certain point, it turns itself off. This is a system where the more feedback it gets, the warmer it gets, the more it pumps out carbon. The more carbon there is, the more it gets warmer. The more it gets warmer, the more carbon pumps out, and that's sometimes referred to as a spiral. It's a dangerous thing. Glenn, thanks for the call. Good point. Well said. 16 minutes before the hour. Susan in California is on the line. Hey, Susan, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good afternoon. Yeah. What's up?
Okay, sorry.
And my mouse here. I've got right outside the window. He keeps he's having a great time burrowing through a pile of leaves in the snow.
I love your description. It was wonderful. I haven't seen any snow yet this year.
Yeah, I think I'm getting very cynical here because when Bush said nothing for a few days, I was thinking, God, they're trying to figure out how to carve this up. You know, how they would go in and do relief from which they would get a return for reconstruction or whatever. And then yesterday we heard 13 million turned to 35 million, but the rest of it is a loan or loans.
Right, a line of credit, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And I was thinking, you know the fellow, what's his name, Perkins, the economic hitman.
Yeah, John Perkins.
Yeah, John Perkins. I was thinking about this yesterday, and then I heard on, I think it was on Unfiltered, they replayed an interview with him.
Uh-huh.
And it was so perfect. I thought, yeah, this is what they're doing, and I really hate being this cynical.
Yeah.
But it seems like we are, or we, I don't want to say that because I'm not, but there are many, many people that are just motivated by greed here and really don't have a lot of compassion towards other people, especially people of color and especially Muslims.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know, blew my mind.
You know, the thing, and it's easy to be cynical isn't even the right word. It's easy to be kind of look down our nose at the news service or whatever. One of the things that amazed me in the early reporting was the big hoop-de-doop that was made out of the two white children who they couldn't find their parents, and very little discussion about the tens of thousands of homeless and orphaned brown children.
Right.
And these were, by the way, now, you know, you could explain that away by saying, well, these were kids who spoke English, therefore you could interview them. Turns out they didn't even speak English. They just happened to be white. And
right.
I just had this in my mind. I had this image of the press corps going, oh, white kids. And all of a sudden everybody stampeding over with a camera.
Where is your mind going, Tom?
Yeah, well, it's like it's a sad commentary on how self-absorbed we are as
yes.
a culture. And, you know, and you know, on the one hand, I think we need to point that out. On the other hand, I don't think that we need to flog ourselves for it. But yes, there. I mean, this was I saw this during the Vietnam War. I knew people who went over to Vietnam and referred to the Vietnamese as gooks and slants and slopes
right.
and whatnot. And as if because they were a different race, they were not fully human. And I think that there's a tendency in the United States. The Lancet says 100,000 people have died in Iraq. The more conservative numbers put it at 16,000. We're talking innocent civilian casualties. Somewhere between, you know, 10, 20,000 and 100,000 people have died as a result of our actions directly.
Right.
And
you know what I find really
And we're not
amazing.
Seeing these bodies. We're you know, it's well, it's they're different
yeah.
people.
Well, they're showing the thing, this tragedy on the TV, but they're not showing what's happening in Iraq. They're
right.
not showing the results of what we've done.
Right, and they've been telling us that they're not showing us the dead in Iraq because American people don't want to see dead people on their TV.
Well, that's
then,
true,
and,
isn't it?
And
I
then
mean,
for the last 3 days, we've seen nothing but dead yes. people on our TV. It's
right.
you know.
Right. They would have to wake up if we actually showed what's happening. It's so painful.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, we'd have to wake up.
It raises a whole lot of different issues. Susan, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. George in Northern Virginia on the line. Hey, George.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just calling to chat with you about Crime and Punishment, really.
Okay.
I've written a new novel called Nelson's Payback that deals with the financial industry. And the reason I'm talking to you about it is that it posits the idea of What if you had nothing to lose and had been swindled out of everything you had for your retirement? Would you go after the people who did it?
It depends on the. I mean, it's a good motivation. It's a good inciting incident to use Robert McKee's language for a novel or a screenplay.
Well, I've taken that and sort of run with it, and I just wanted to know what you would think about that yourself.
What would I do?
Yeah. What if you woke up tomorrow? You found out everything in your retirement account is gone, and the person who you were counting on to handle it is now living on the French Riviera and spending your money.
Yeah, I'd be more inclined to figure out a way to get a new retirement fund than get revenge, but that's just the way I'm wired. I can perfectly understand where somebody else may be more interested in revenge.
But, you know, not sure the point of your question, George, but that's my answer.
That's your well, so. I take a little different tack in this book.
And that would make it a good book. See, that's the thing. My response would make a lousy book. Your response, I'm sure, would make a wonderful book. So I look forward to reading it. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Last week, the City Council in Salinas, California, capped a series of contentious budget debates with a decision to close all of its public libraries next summer, becoming the largest U.S. city to do so. WIN reporter Vinnie Lombardo has more.
Charles Williamson called the council action shameful and says he's worried for kids whose parents can't afford the books, videos, and computers offered at the library.
We're making them stay poor and uneducated. It's not fair. It's not right. It's not what America's about.
It's a bad time.
Salinas Mayor Ana Caballero.
Universally, it's a bad time for cities and county government in our country.
Like many small and mid-sized communities, Salinas is facing huge budget shortfalls and tough choices about which programs to axe. Over the past year, spending was cut by $8.2 million, and the city no longer pays for road repairs, trash pickup, and other services. Closing the three libraries will save about $3.5 million a year.
It's almost like amputations. We're taking apart pieces that we really should be providing.
Caballero says she's not proud of the decision to shut the libraries and blames reduced revenues and state budget takeaways. Sylvia Garcia, a Salinas librarian, doesn't think that's a good enough answer.
And because the monies have been mismanaged, the community is going to pay the price.
In last month's election, Salinas voters rejected measures A and B, which, if passed, would have added up to $10 million annually to the general fund. Garcia says voters are being punished and wonders why the cuts weren't spread around.
There are many other departments within the city of Salinas, including fire and police, and yet the library is the one that was penalized the most.
While hiring of new police and fire personnel was put on hold, neither department experienced cuts. As for librarians, most are long-term and aren't sure what to expect after receiving their severance pay. Salinas residents will meet mid-January to discuss plans for a new tax initiative. For the Workers Independent News, I'm Vinny Lombardo.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Little mouse just ran off the step into a pile of snow. He's got a little hole that he goes through the snow, you know, to get in underneath the snow. And I just, with a sinking feeling in my stomach, noticed across the top of the snow, little kitty footprints. So I'll keep you up to date on how our little mouse is going. We ought to give him a name. Ralphie. How's that sound? Eh, he doesn't look like a Ralphie. We could have a name the mouse contest. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Aaron in Massachusetts on the line. Hey, Aaron, what's on your mind today?
How you doing? I love listening to your show, Tom.
Thank you.
I just had a question and a comment. Well, the comment first is about how our nation's crisis in leadership is really being exposed during this terrible time in Indonesia, and how, quite frankly, I'm quite saddened to see that no one is willing to step up and assume a leadership role, even though the president's paying a sensible lip service.
Yeah.
And I think that one thing which is really being highlighted is sort of a cross-connection is how Colin Powell, who formulated finally sort of an almost intelligent response to this tragedy, saying that we will be there for whatever is necessary, how he's been, he wasn't the first voice to speak on this issue. And I find it sad that a leader such as Secretary Powell, outgoing Secretary Powell, basically lost his leadership presence during this administration and how this administration consistently ignored him.
Yeah, the role of Secretary of State, I mean, he really should be the one, the point man on all this stuff, and clearly he's been cut off at the knees, going back to his opposition to the war in Iraq.
But it's terrible, especially during this time when our foreign policy leaders and our foreign policy is being criticized around the world, how our administration has chosen to go away from proven professionals such as Mr. Powell towards Condoleezza Rice, for example. And at a time when a tragedy evolves and we have to come up with a message, the message is garbled. First, our leaders say, well, we'll give, you know, $14 million or less than Pedro Martinez is going to make next year. When it should have been, whatever you need, we will provide.
Right, and we will be there, and we're on our way, and we're gonna do whatever it takes, and you know, and so on. And no, we're not. And you know, particularly given that this has gotten very little coverage, that this part of Southeast Asia is the new breeding ground for Islamic fundamentalism. And here's an opportunity for us to really shine, and we blew it. Thanks for the call, Aaron. I appreciate it. Well said. Absolutely well said. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where despair is not an option. Get active out there. We got to take this country back. We got a big job to do, my friends.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, To people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
The Flight Attendants Union filed a federal lawsuit against Northwest Airlines on Tuesday for refusing to come to the bargaining table if employees were present. The Professional Flight Attendants Association is charging Northwest with violating the Railway Labor Act by keeping observers out of contract talks. Northwest is asking for major wage and benefit concessions, similar to an agreement signed by the Pilots Union in November. In that labor deal, the Airline Pilots Association took a 15% pay cut.
The strike against the Youngstown, Ohio newspaper is about to enter its eighth week with no sign that the paper's management is willing to negotiate. The 171 workers who are currently picketing the Youngstown Vindicator seeking better wages, working conditions, and health care benefits have found a great deal of support from the community.
We've had a lot of support, including a resolution supporting the Vindicator newspaper employees strike, which was passed by a vote of 7-0 by Youngstown City Council 2 weeks ago.
Deborah Chalice-Flora is vice president of the Youngstown Newspaper Guild. The striking workers see the support of the community in the print run of The Valley Voice, an alternative weekly paper started by the workers. The Voice currently has reached a print run of 51,000. In comparison, the Vindicator has a daily print run of 65,000. Also, neighboring towns have also begun to show support. A councilman in Warren, Ohio, publicly burned his Vindicator subscription card and vowed to bring a resolution supporting the workers to that city's council. Flora says that the union is ready to come back to the bargaining table when the paper expresses an interest in negotiating.
We don't have any talks scheduled at this time. We stand ready to bargain, though. It takes two sides to do the bargaining, and we've already told the company that we're willing to meet with them whenever, wherever.
Unions from around the world have reached out to help victims of the devastating December 26 tsunami. As the death toll climbs past 80,000 people, relief agencies are trying to halt the spread of communicable diseases threatening survivors. Transport workers in India have agreed to donate one day's pay and 100 workers to assist in relief measures. Also in India, the Southern Railway Union is distributing food, clothing, and medicine. The Swedish Metal Workers Union is donating $1 million and urging unions in the United States to do the same.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. After 30 years of improvement, leading indicators show a worsening environmental trend over the last 4 years. Statistics show that civil citations issued to polluters fell 57%. Criminal pollution prosecutions dropped 17%. Cleanups of toxic waste down by 52%. Fish consumption warnings for rivers doubled. Beach closing up 26%. Asthma attacks increased by 6%. On the bright side, greenhouse gas emissions were reduced by 0.5%. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Have you been chipped yet? You could be soon, for the Food and Drug Administration has now cleared the way for a Florida corporation, Applied Digital Solutions, to market a tiny electronic device called VeriChip that is surgically implanted under the skin of your arm or hand. Don't worry, says the corporation soothingly. Being chipped doesn't hurt you, and it's really for your own good. For example, they say, if you have an accident, your implanted chip could contain vital medical information that could be accessed by an ambulance crew, assuming the crew has bought a handheld chip-reading scanner, which Applied Digital also happens to sell. Besides, coup the corporate hawkers, being chipped is a matter of great personal convenience for you. No longer would you have to carry cumbersome ID cards to get into your workplace. You could have all the required ID stored on your chip, right inside your body. And think of the convenience of not having to fumble with credit cards. Instead, your credit numbers literally are implanted in you. So rather than running your cards through a scanner, a retailer can simply scan you. Talk about consumer progress. VeriChip turns your own body, your very own self, into a barcoded payment system. After all, says Applied Digital, our country has been implanting such devices in millions of cattle and pets, and it has worked beautifully, so why not humans? For you fussy libertarians who see Big Brother looming behind every scientific breakthrough like VeriChip, the company says that being implanted is voluntary, so where's the worry? This is Jim Hightower saying, the worry, of course, is that being chipped will not stay voluntary. Corporations and government will soon insist that their employees, frequent travelers, protesters, and others be tagged for security reasons. To rebel against this effort to turn us into a nation of cattle, call the Electronic Privacy Information Center, 202-488-1140.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens. Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Just a reminder, tomorrow, in this hour, with our best of the rest of the news period, tomorrow at the bottom of the hour, 30 minutes past, we're going to have Rob Call, editor and founder of Op-Ed News and organizer of the cutting-edge meetings on the brain, positive psychology, and the art, science, and application of story, StoryCon. He holds these things every February, January or February, out in Palm Springs. I will be broadcasting live from there this year, in fact. And Matthew Rothschild, the editor of The Progressive Magazine, one of the leading voices for peace and social justice in this country. And this will be the news you don't hear in the mainstream media. We're going to recap the news for the week, our best of the rest of the news, tomorrow afternoon. George W. Bush's two closest, speaking of, by the way, before I get into this thing, I thought Ben made an interesting point. Ben, who called in from Illinois in the last hour, talking about, could it be the deglaciation, that the buildup of CO2 in the atmosphere, producing warmth in the atmosphere, producing the loss of glaciers on landmasses, making the landmasses lighter, causing them to float higher, relatively speaking, than that land that has seawater on top of it, which pushes down on it, could be leading to these earthquakes. And he said that if you graph the increase in CO2 over the last century, and you graph the increase in earthquakes of greater than a 2.5 magnitude, the graphs correspond perfectly. I would love to see that graph, by the way. And Ben, if you're still listening, or if at any point you do listen, it looks like he's dropped out of the chat room, but although a bunch of other people have come in. Anyhow, email it to me. Let me know, tom@tomhartman.com. I would love to know more about that. Find it fascinating. But this is a real problem. Oh, and on the mouse alert, I have a mouse outside my window, and I got to tell you, this is the cutest mouse I've ever seen. He's got a white belly and throat and brown all around the rest of him, and great big ears, and long to AZ, just a little thing. Somebody in the chat room says, is it a rat? No, it's a mouse. And many suggested names. Somebody suggested we should call him John Kerry. He runs into his hole when it's scary out there. Now, that I thought was a cheap shot. Somebody else suggested we should call him Ben. Ben Franklin Mouse, maybe? Benjamin Mouse? It's kind of a cute name for a mouse. Somebody else suggested that we should call him Jerry, so it could be the Tom and Jerry Show. One of my best friends in New York, Jerry, used to be a business partner of mine. That was the Tom and Jerry Show, Jerry Schneiderman. But anyway, we have not yet come up with a name for the mouse. We're given that there's footprints, kitty footprints, all around where this mouse is hanging out, I think maybe we'll wait a day to name him, make sure he makes it through. Good luck, little mouse. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, by the way. Our website, tomhartman.com. However you spell it, it'll get you there. If you want to drop into our chat room, just click the live chat button. It'll take you to our message board, where you will find a link to the chat room itself, which is well-populated. We have a new chat room. For those of you who are having troubles getting into the one when we were using CompuServe as a chat room, the CompuServe Democratic Forum, which I have great honor and respect for and am very grateful to for having hosted us as long as they did. But I know that there were a number of folks who had problems getting in because it was, you know, part of the AOL system and they had to you had to have screen names and this, that, and the other thing, whatever. If you had a problem getting into the old chat room, odds are you won't have a problem getting to this one. This is just a very, very simple one. It's running right off our website, a Java-based chat function. And it's really cool, and you can change your font size, and you can put in hyperlinks, and name the mouse Democrat, says Pace Cop. Ah, come on. Let's see. Let's call him Hearty. Name the mouse John Kerry. Name the mouse Cat Food. No, that's a terrible one. We're not going to do that. Back to where I started with this. Article by Jeffrey Lean, the environmental editor of The Independent, one of the major newspapers in the UK. Bush left in the cold by climate allies, and the reason I veered off to talk about Ben's theory about global warming and glaciation being related to the increase in earthquake activity, which is related to this tsunami, which is related to this disaster, and could it be that this disaster that just happened has some relationship, or at least the timing of it, has some relationship to the consumption of carbon dioxide by, well, the United States. I mean, we're the largest consumer in the world, produce about a quarter of the world's CO2. Could it be? The rest of the world is starting to get rather concerned about these sorts of things. George W. Bush's two closest allies in his attempt to sabotage international action to combat global warming last week dramatically distanced themselves from him, writes Jeffrey Lean in The Independent. Saudi Arabia announced that it had approved the Kyoto Protocol, the treaty on climate change, which President Bush has been trying to kill. And Australia, while still rejecting it, parted company from the United States by saying that it was prepared to negotiate the successor. Amazing stuff. New negotiations are due to begin next year on a successor to Kyoto, which will come into force in February, following Russia's decision to ratify it last autumn. Russia was the one that pushed it over the top. So, interesting stuff here. 40 million for George Bush's inaugural ball. You know, there's going to be a big demonstration. Folks are showing up. They've figured out that if you show up in Washington, D.C. for Bush's inauguration and you look at all like you may be a protester, if you're carrying a sign, if you have a button, if you have a poster, they're going to be patting people down. If you've got something hidden in your pockets, anything from an egg last time people actually egged his car as he drove by, anything from an egg to a poster that you might want to whip out at an opportune moment, you will be taken out of the crowd. This, just like the Bush campaign appearances, is going to be a Department of Toady Affairs event, pure and simple. And so what people are doing is they're getting haircuts, picking up some nice new clothes so they look a little more Republican, and they're going to get their tickets and show up and line the parade route, and as the president drives by, they're going to turn their backs on him. Some claim they're going to also drop their drawers. I suspect that will get them in jail, but I doubt very many will do that, but people are there's this organized campaign to turn your back on George W. Bush when he goes for his inauguration. It'll be interesting to see if this gets reported, because 4 years ago, he couldn't even drive to the inauguration. He had, you know, normally it's very slow. Jimmy Carter actually walked it. George W. Bush had to drive it at 40 miles an hour in a bulletproof car with police escort because so many people were lining the parade route, shouting, screaming, and throwing eggs and things. And the amazing thing, the truly amazing thing, is that the footage of this was not shown by ABC, CBS, or NBC at all. Most Americans don't know what happened. And yet, I mean, yet it was huge. So anyhow, what's going to happen here in the next few weeks? We shall see. 1-866-889-8894. Ann in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Ann, welcome to the program.
Oop, here.
Let me turn up the volume on you. I'm sorry, Ann. There you are. Now you're on.
Hi, I just want to say Happy New Year to you.
Well, thank you. Happy New Year to you, too.
Since I probably won't talk to you between now and Saturday, what I wanted to talk about a little bit mundane compared to some of the other stuff you're talking about, but it still ties in with the corporate people, insurance companies, which have a lot of ties to Bush.
Yeah.
I live in Florida, and I wanted to get some quotes on insurance for both my car and my home because I'm thinking about changing insurance companies. I don't know what you have in your state, but in the state of Florida, insurance companies are not can use your credit scores as a means of deciding if they want to insure you, and a lot of the companies now are refusing to even give you quotes unless you're willing to surrender to them your Social Security number, and they run a credit check on you.
Right. It's interesting.
And that makes
it's very
difficult to shop for insurance when you have people that they're getting your name, your address, your phone number. They want your date of birth, and they want your Social Security number. Who are these people?
And many of
them over all this credit information just to get a quote.
Right, and many of them are in India, by the way. It's interesting. Here in Vermont, we have the most restrictive insurance policies in the nation. We have laws in Vermont. These were all pushed through by Howard Dean, by the way, when he was governor, pushed through the legislature. We have laws that make it very difficult for insurance companies to rip off consumers. And as a consequence of that, there's only about about six major health insurance companies that will even do business in the state of Vermont. When I moved to this state, and with regard to car insurance, when I moved to this state, I had Geico. I had had Geico for my car insurance since the 80s, since the early 1980s. In fact, actually, since the 1970s, back when they were insuring teachers in the early 1970s, I taught very briefly just as a fill-in, you know, just a substitute in a school. Actually, my brother went to the school and qualified to get this teacher's insurance, which is how Geico started out. They started out as an insurance company for teachers, for the teachers union, and incredibly good rates. And I had Geico for, two, three decades. I moved to Vermont. We had a small fender bender kind of thing. A little bit of maintenance work needed to be done on the cars. It was less than $1,000. Submitted to Geico. They dumped me. They immediately dumped me. My brother-in-law moves into the state of Vermont. Also from, where did he come from? I think they were living in Florida last. But in any case, he had a Geico as well. As soon as he gets here, they dump him. And I called them up. I said, what's the deal? They said, you know, we're not going to give you insurance. I called the insurance commissioner's office here in Vermont, and I said, what's the deal? You know, and she said, well, you know, we have laws, we have anti-fraud laws in the state that make it difficult for insurance companies to rip people off. And so there are a number of insurance companies that just prefer not to do business in Vermont. And she said, I don't know if Geico is one of them. And I don't know. I hope I'm not casting aspersions on them. I'm simply telling what happened. I called them up and asked if that was the case. The person would not say one way or the other. But I do know that there are a bunch of insurance companies. So here that it's the Hobson's choice. Either we have to have national protections, and George W. Bush, of course, is working hard in his tort reform to eliminate any sort of national protections. Either we have to have national protections against predatory corporations, or the states you end up in a situation where the states are either giving in entirely, like you have in Florida, where they just do whatever the insurance companies want, or they try to protect the people, like here in Vermont, and a lot of the insurance companies won't do business in the state, or if you move into the state, they drop you.
I think it's a shame that in this country where they so-called supposed to be free market that I can't get insurance quotes. Well, I can't get health insurance for that for my husband because of a heart attack. I can't switch insurance companies without giving a whole bunch of credit information to these companies. And then, of course, all that is registered on your credit report that you've had all these inquiries.
Which is a negative mark. It's a mess, Ann. It's just absolutely a mess. We need major reform in this country. We need to get away from the corporatism and back to some rational governing policy. It ain't going to come from Bush, though. 20 minutes after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It was in the early morning hours when I fell into a phone call. Billy
supernatural powers, I slammed into a brick wall.
And welcome back. Every now and then, Paul Simon's music just gets up against the edge of the chipmunks, you know?
You don't feel you could love me, but I feel...
Just a little too fast. I don't know. I guess I'm more of a Van Morrison guy. Anyway, welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, TomHartman.com. The website, however you spell it, it'll get you in. The chat room full of folks. Interesting conversations. Discussing Bill O'Reilly now, yes. Well, I will not, repeat some of the things being said. Taxpayers may be liable for oil cleanup, a new gift to you and me from the Bush administration. I'll tell you about that right after this. First, let's hear from Kate in Arcata, California. Hey, Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Kate?
Excellent. Me too. I just wanted to say something triggered my cynicism, which Bush seems to be able to do so easily these days. Things that you would never think of. You begin to entertain the idea that it could be true. And when you said that the nations that were affected by the tsunami, many of them are the new breeding ground for Islamic fundamentalism.
Yes.
It made me think that maybe this is a windfall for people who think the way that Bush do, and maybe the tactic is let them suffer. The weaker they are, the stronger we are. I hate to say that, but I've seen that attitude. You know, they try to mask it, but the lack of caring, not responding for 3 days, is appalling.
I can't go there, Anne.
I know.
Or Kate, rather. I'm sorry. I just can't go there. I can't think as poorly as I think of George W. Bush. I can't think that poorly of him. I do think he's capable of stealing elections. I do think he's capable of lying and to us in a way that causes the death of many of our people. That would be, first of all, it wouldn't be particularly effective. It wouldn't be particularly useful. I think what you have here is an administration that came in that is almost entirely made up of business people rather than politicians. We have lost in many regards our respect for, our sense of, our understanding of what it means to be a statesman or a stateswoman, if the word is appropriate. And just the whole idea of a higher calling. People went into the Kennedy administration. After they left the Kennedy administration, many of them did not go into the private sector and clean up and make millions like they're doing out of the Bush administration. And really started with the Reagan administration. That's when it got really hot. You know, this whole idea of public service as a stepping stone to becoming a multimillionaire. Before that, prior to that, the Eisenhower administration, even the Nixon administration to a large extent, prior to Reagan, people went into public service because they wanted to serve the public. And many of these people came out of academia, went back into academia afterwards, or went back into government service, or went to think tanks or whatever. And they were very good at what they did. They understood diplomacy. They understood the world and how the world worked. And instead, we have now a bunch of Yahoo MBA business types running the country for the first time in the history of the United States. Instead of having politicians, people who have training at the law, lawyers very often, you know, going into politics, these people don't even understand the law. They have very little respect for it, obviously. Alberto Gonzalez saying that the Geneva Conventions are quaint. And I think that they are just so incompetent, so utterly, staggeringly, blindingly, breathtakingly incompetent that they would lead us into this war in Iraq and never consider what to do after the military conquest, that they would see a disaster in the world, that the whole world would not realize that the whole world is looking at what happened in Southeast Asia with the same kind of horror that we looked at 9/11 with. In other words, you know, this is a true disaster, setting aside the, you know, the anger about who did it and all that, just the horror of it. They don't even get that, and they don't get how you appropriately respond to these things. I think that what we're seeing here, it's not stupidity. It's that they have not swam in these waters,
I guess that's maybe a more likely scenario, that they just don't know.
Yeah, I think they're just staggeringly incompetent. The only person in the entire administration with any foreign policy experience of any sort, really, is Colin Powell. And he's been trying to do something, and he keeps getting marginalized, and he's being thrown out. That's my take on it, Kate.
Well, thanks for your comments.
You're welcome. Okay. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour.
This January, it's the return of cable's most talked about show, Growing Up Gotti. It all starts at 9.
Did my ex-husband send you here? Just drive me crazy.
Followed by the new real-life series, Caesars 24-7. An all-access behind-the-scenes pass to Sin City's hottest casino, Caesars Palace.
Sometimes people hook up at the table.
Growing Up Gotti premieres at 9, 8 Central, followed by the new real-life series, Caesars 24-7. This January, only on A&E.
I just won $1 million!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
The Flight Attendants Union filed a federal lawsuit against Northwest Airlines on Tuesday for refusing to come to the bargaining table if employees were present. The Professional Flight Attendants Association is charging Northwest with violating the Railway Labor Act by keeping observers out of contract talks. Northwest is asking for major wage and benefit concessions similar to an agreement signed by the Pilots Union in November. In that labor deal, the Airline Pilots Association took a 15% pay cut.
The strike against the Youngstown, Ohio newspaper is about to enter its eighth week with no sign that the paper's management is willing to negotiate. The 171 workers who are currently picketing the Youngstown Vindicator seeking better wages, working conditions, and health care benefits have found a great deal of support from the community.
We've had a lot of support, including a resolution supporting the Vindicator newspaper employee strike, which was passed by a vote of 7-0 by Youngstown City Council 2 weeks ago.
Deborah Shalas Flora is vice president of the Youngstown Newspaper Guild. The striking workers see the support of the community in the print run of the Valley Voice, an alternative weekly paper started by the workers. The Voice currently has reached a print run of 51,000. In comparison, the Vindicator has a daily print run of 65,000. Also, neighboring towns have also begun to show support. A councilman in Warren, Ohio, publicly burned his Vindicator subscription card and vowed to bring a resolution supporting the workers to that city's council. Flora says that the union is ready to come back to the bargaining table when the paper expresses an interest in negotiating.
We don't have any talks scheduled at this time. We stand ready to bargain, though. It takes two sides to do the bargaining, and we've already told the company that we're willing to meet with them whenever, wherever.
Unions from around the world have reached out to help victims of the devastating December 26 tsunami. As the death toll climbs past 80,000 people, relief agencies are trying to halt the spread of communicable diseases threatening survivors. Transport workers in India have agreed to donate one day's pay and 100 workers to assist in relief measures. Also in India, the Southern Railway Union is distributing food, clothing, and medicine. The Swedish Metal Workers Union is donating $1 million and urging unions in the United States to do the same.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. After 30 years of improvement, leading indicators show a worsening environmental trend over the last 4 years. Statistics show that civil citations issued to polluters fell 57%. Criminal pollution prosecutions dropped 17%. Cleanups of toxic waste down by 52%. Fish consumption warnings for rivers doubled. Beach closing up 26%. Asthma attacks increased by 6%. On the bright side, greenhouse gas emissions were reduced by 0.5%. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Another dream about a lion at the door. They weren't half as frightening as they were before. But I'm thinking about eternity. Some kind of ecstasy got hold on me.
It's been a while since I've read any Steinbeck. What Moondog asked, what in the chat room, what was the name of the mouse that Lenny had? Remember Lenny? In Of Mice and Men? I don't remember. I don't know. Maybe somebody in the chat room will. That's the sort of thing you can track down with Google in 30 seconds. Somebody will pop in there in the chat room, I'm sure, with that fairly soon. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, the toll-free number if you'd like to be on the program. Anything you want to bring up, any topics, we can cover pretty much anything today. Actually, any day. You know, I'm not one of these, it's got to be this topic or nothing at all, type of talk show hosts. although we do, you know, generally kind of theme each hour nonetheless. If you want to go off in some wild direction, if it's interesting, I'll go there with you. And if you disagree with me or want to tell me that I'm nuts, crazy, insane, out of my mind, or just plain wrong, I would love to hear from you. 866-889-8894. Frankly, I think, what do you call them? Hostile callers, I think is what it's called in the industry. They are the most fun. But I, you know, if you want to agree, I like that too. Anyways, I started out to tell you about this new Christmas gift from George W. Bush to the oil industry, from us to them via him. This, an article by David Pace in the Associated Press yesterday, probably be in today's newspapers. Bonds posted by companies with federal oil and gas leases. Now, first I should explain what this is. If you get a lease from the federal government to drill on federal land, say there's, you know, federal parkland, we have hundreds of millions, I believe, certainly millions, I believe it's hundreds of millions, of acres of national parkland. And, you know, this is something that really Teddy Roosevelt aggressively started building our National Park Service, but has been growing consistently over the years. Until George W. came along. For the first time, we're actually reducing our national parks. But that's a whole other rant. We got into that one the week before last. But anyhow, if there's some federal land and you want to go in and drill on it and pull out oil or gas, the government says, well, that's just fine. However, you have to clean up after you're done. Right? After all, it's a national park. And even if it wasn't, it's just the better part of manners, right?
Clean up after yourself when you're done eating, Ralphie.
Yeah, that's why we can't call a mouse Ralphie. Somebody says, wait until tomorrow. Make sure he's still there before we give him a name. Good point. So what the oil and gas companies have to do is they have to post a bond. It's, you know, they put up a certain amount of money and they say, okay, here's the cash. Put it in the bank in an escrow account or post it with the government. And if when they're all done, they haven't cleaned up, the government, it's sort of like a rent deposit. If they haven't cleaned up, the government takes that money from that bond and cleans up for you. Well, guess what? New policy from the Bush administration. Bonds posted by companies with federal oil and gas leases cover only a small fraction of the projected cost of plugging wells and restoring land once the fuel is extracted, leaving, guess who? You and me, the taxpayers! With the potential for huge cleanup bills, an Associated Press analysis of federal records shows. The Bureau of Land Management has collected just $132 million in bonds from oil and gas companies responsible for more than 100,000 wells on federal lands. Now, it costs between $2,500 and $75,000 each to cap a well and restore the surface area. In the past 5 years, the BLM has spent $2.2 million just to clean up 167 wells where operators defaulted on their bonds. That means you and I paid for it. Average rate of $1,366 per well. Therefore, the shortfall between the bonds, that is the amount, the rent deposit, as it were, the amount that we're asking them to put up, and the actual cleanup costs could leave taxpayers with as much as a $1 billion potential liability if companies reneged on their cleanup responsibility, AP analysis found. Bush administration has fall quietly shelved an 8-year effort to increase the minimum bond requirements for oil and gas drilling on federal lands. Current rates were set in 1960. There has been a bit of inflation since then. And gas and oil companies are the only federal mineral leaseholders who are not required to post full reclamation bonds. Gee, the oil and gas companies are really getting a pass here. Could it be related to the fact that our president is an oil industry CEO and our vice president is an oil industry CEO and our new Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, has an oil tanker named after her?
Just a coincidence.
Yes. Following a critical 1996 Inspector General's report, this does go back to the Clinton administration, by the way. The Bureau of Land Management in 1998 proposed a rule change that would have increased the minimum lease bond to $20,000 and the minimum statewide bond to $75,000. Keeping in mind it costs an average of $13,066 to reclaim one of these things. So, well, that's something good that Clinton did. He said, hey, let's raise the lease amount. At that time, the agency said increases just to cover inflation since 1960 would require a lease bond of $50,000 and a statewide bond of $135,000. The rule change was ready for final publication when Bush took office in 2001, notes the Associated Press. But George Bush ordered a halt to the rule change. Ain't gonna do it. Wouldn't be prudent. Can't make it more expensive for them oil companies. In one coal bed methane field in southeastern Montana, an engineering consultant retained by the Northern Plains Resource Council testified in a civil case against BLM that it would cost $2 million to $213 million to reclaim the 1,564-acre field. Fidelity Exploration and Production Company, the operator, has posted a $150,000 nationwide bond with BLM, $200,000 state bond with Montana. Not bad. You post $150,000, even though it may cost $213 million to clean up. And if you don't like cleaning it up, you just kind of walk away, right? Maybe you'll have to declare bankruptcy, but the bankruptcy laws have been fiddled with to the point where if you're a human being and you're using bankruptcy to try and get out from underneath a real problem, you're stuck. But if you're a corporation, it's just another way of doing business. Just ask Donald Trump. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Andra in Columbus, Ohio, on the line.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, welcome, Andra.
Thank you. You mentioned a few moments ago about how people in power are sort of MBA, not public servants, things of that nature.
Right.
And something that struck me recently was what was not being said about Rumsfeld's talk to that group of soldiers who were asking him about, you know, why are we having to dig for, you know, armament for our vehicles and things of that nature.
Right.
Was that's what got all the press, but later on in the clip, which no one seems to be talking about, is the one of the other soldiers mentioned they weren't getting their pay, and as a result, some of their spouses, you know, checks were bouncing, things of that nature. And he turns to an aide or something and says, oh, well, you know, we need to check into that because that's just not right. We need to get somebody on that. So it's like, where money is involved, you have is instant attention, but where lives, limbs, you know, those kinds of things aren't as important.
I wonder, Andra, if, because the answer that he gave to the first question, you know, why are we having to scrounge for stuff? Mm-hmm. The answer that Rumsfeld gave was essentially, we're doing the best we can.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and in fact, he said it's a matter of physics, and that you can't run a factory faster than its capacity. And then it turns out we learned a few days later that the factory had 20% more capacity than we had ever asked it to use, and that these guys had been yelling at the Department of Defense that they had the ability to make more, and they hadn't been being bought. And I just wonder, you know, I have a hard time believing, frankly, as poorly as I think of Don Rumsfeld. You know, I think of him as an absolute incompetent planner, an ideologue, but I can't imagine him sitting there saying, let's run the, you know, let's only buy 80% of the capacity and let guys die.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't believe it. And so I'm wondering where the ball got dropped. Obviously, somebody didn't tell him that we weren't buying all the armor we could, or, somewhere it broke down. And the tragedy in my mind, frankly, is not so much that Rumsfeld had a kind of blow them off answer or that he was uninformed, but that nobody will ever be held to account for this.
Oh, absolutely.
And Rumsfeld is never going to apologize for it. He's not going to take responsibility for it. The Bush administration is not going to. They simply never make mistakes.
Yeah, so true.
But I am willing to cut him a little slack on it. But I would have liked to have heard an explanation. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm perfectly willing to say to Don Rumsfeld, okay, you made a mistake, and thank you for apologizing and for fixing it. But, you know, there's no apology and we're not even sure that there's a fix, then there's a problem. And I think that the dichotomy of those things that you pointed out, or the difference in response of
of, you know, can we get more armor versus can we get more dollars, points that out, that it, probably his intentions are right, but that there's just massive incompetence all around him,
mm-hmm.
which is why, you know, if it has to do with dollars, he knows checks can be written. He didn't know at the time that more armor could be made, apparently. Or I just don't think he would have said that. I don't think he would have put his foot in his mouth knowing that it would have come out.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Andrew. It's a good point. It's so easy to vilify these guys, and there's certainly a lot to vilify them for. The blood of somewhere between 20 and 100,000 Iraqis, the blood of over 1,000 Americans, over 10,000 if you consider injuries as well, most of them being bloody, is, in my opinion, on the hands of these neocons, these guys who, since the 90s, who are this whole project for a new American century have been saying, oh, let's just take Iraq and, you know, we'll create a haven for democracy in the Middle East and we'll get all the oil and we won't have to worry about Saudi Arabia anymore and blah, blah, blah. These guys have just so profoundly and deeply and in some ways even criminally incompetent that it's mind-boggling. And yet, at the same time, I think we also have to always remember and acknowledge their humanity. You know, they're very real humanity, the fact that they really are human beings, and that in their own way, misguided as it may be, in my opinion, they think they're doing the best in the right way. They're not, but they think they are. I'm just utterly convinced of that. The people have to wake up in the morning, look in the mirror and say, you know, you're a decent person, too. If they can't, they commit suicide. They just, you know, that's it. And in fact, that's the horrible problem of so many of these GIs coming back from war. It's what happened in people that I knew who had been to Vietnam, and they had killed people in Vietnam, and they came back and they could never get loose of the guilt from that. They could never get the blood off their hands, and it haunted them all their lives. And now we're creating another generation of those kinds of soldiers, and already we're seeing, you know, homeless vets from the Gulf War and homeless vets now from this war, and the problems associated with that. 1-866-889-8894, Jeff in Boulder, Colorado. Yeah. Hey, Jeff, welcome.
Hi, Tom. Hey, great job on the Randy Rhoads show last night.
Thank you.
Hey, I wanted to talk about reframing the message. The cons right now are rewriting the textbooks on what happened in Vietnam. And, you know, if it hadn't been for the liberals, we'd have won that war.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, there's a couple of points I wanted to make here on this. First of all, we wouldn't have been in the Vietnam War if it hadn't been for the conservatives. But I'm concerned about this this whole idea of let's rewrite what actually happened there. I've never heard anybody define what winning actually means. And if you look at what Vietnam is today, it really looks like a win to me. Because we have an ultimately very peaceful country. I have a couple of friends that I work with that separately went to Vietnam in the last 10 years. They say, absolutely beautiful country. People there they look very happy. They don't look oppressed in any way. One guy took a bicycle tour across Vietnam, and he said people would invite him into their homes, and they'd feed him and, you know, drink tea, and they'd, you know, talk about, you know, what life was like there.
Mm-hmm.
And it ultimately sounds like everything that we would have wanted as an outcome in that war actually did happen.
Yeah, although the price that ultimately led to it was horrific because of our involvement.
But, I'm concerned because here now liberals are getting blamed for what happened there. Is that same thing going to happen with Iraq? Somehow this is going to become our fault that things didn't go well in Iraq.
Is the Pope
Catholic?
But
I'd like to see the conversation turned around the other way.
Yeah.
Instead of having, you know, us being blamed for everything, say, you know, look, things worked out well. We didn't have tanks rolling down Main Street in America. Everything, the doom and gloom never happened. You guys were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You conservatives were wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And they'll flip that back around and they'll say, well, it was LBJ who escalated the war. And then see, then you've got to go one level deeper and say, well, and now, in fact, they'll say it was Kennedy who first put the advisors in. And then you've got to go back to the two things that brought that about. And one was Kennedy was responding to McCarthy, essentially. You had to be anti-communist and establish your anti-communist credentials, or you couldn't survive politically in the United States as a result of Joe McCarthy and the climate of fear that he was promoting. That it was, and then with regard to LBJ, Kennedy, the big issue that Kennedy and Nixon were beating each other up over was Nixon was Cuba going communist on Nixon's watch. And LBJ became convinced after Kennedy was assassinated that the Castro had something to do with killing Kennedy. And so he decided to stop trying to draw a line against communism with Cuba. And he had to figure out someplace else to do it because it was the political thing to do. And that took us to Vietnam. And that it's a very messy thing. We actually have a book coming out on this next year, on this whole topic of how this all came about. It's just a fascinating history. But it doesn't lend itself to one-sentence sound bites. Jeff, I got a boogie. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Tom.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman. People who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Descending into volcanoes and chasing tornadoes, all in a day's work for scientists in a new book from National Geographic. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Marie Edmonds and Richard Hurd climb into active volcanoes. Josh Werman chases tornadoes, and Ross Stein turned a childhood earthquake into a lifelong pursuit. All four are scientists, and they're profiled in a new book called Forces of Nature. Author Catherine O'Neill Grace says the book is meant to capture the adventurous side of Earth science for kids age 9 to 14.
One of the things that they're thinking about is, what am I going to do when I'm an adult? And I'm not sure that science is always depicted in children's books as something that can be really exciting, like riding in a helicopter and getting so close to the hot lava in a volcano that the paint literally boils on the outside of the helicopter. So we tried to convey that science is something tremendously exciting and that kids, when they're looking forward to a career, can think about not only the technology aspects and the intellectual aspects, but also the adventure aspects.
As a writer of children's books, Grace likes to probe topics that kids find both frightening and thrilling. She says knowledge can calm kids' fears about the likelihood of an earthquake or a tornado, as well as equip them with steps to take if one does happen. But Grace is most interested in persuading young people to pursue the sciences.
I hope that kids, especially girls, will think seriously about science as a career and think about what that means in terms of the kinds of work they should do in high school and college. I'm hoping that my book in its own small way can show that science and math aren't boring.
The book Forces of Nature is a companion volume to a new IMAX film of the same name. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. A telephone number. Rich in Chicago, Illinois on the line. Hey, Rich, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
Oh, a couple of comments. One, you know, the comparison of this tidal wave or tsunami in Asia, you know, I'm surprised people aren't outraged by the 100,000 people that have died in Iraq. People are so up in arms. I mean, it's horrible and tragic, but
yeah, I made
I'm
that
blown
point.
Away by how many people have died at the hands of humans.
I made that point day before yesterday on this show, and it was really interesting, the email response I got and posted on our message board as well. Some folks were yes, and they were pointing out the fact that our news media now for a year and a half have been saying we can't show you dead bodies because it's just inappropriate, and all of a sudden we're seeing dead bodies.
Exactly. And one other thing.
But the other response I got was from people saying it's not 100,000 people who died in Iraq. That was the Lancet projection. The actual bodycountiraq.org or whatever the website is says it's really like 16,000 or 18,000. And so I also got taken to task for quoting wrong numbers. So go figure, you know.
I don't know. It's pretty reliable. But one more thing. Aceh province, you know, has been in a civil war with Indonesia for a long time.
Right.
And it'd be interesting to see how much help that Jakarta or the capital would give those people because they've been fighting for independence just like East Timor was. I wonder if anybody's been keeping an eye on that.
And good old Henry Kissinger sure helped the East Timor situation a whole lot.
Oh, yeah. And Wolfowitz had his hand in there in Indonesia politics for a while as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this changes the geopolitics of it. And that's the other part that nobody has brought up, to the best of my knowledge, in any of this, is that because this is an area that is the new breeding ground for Islamic fundamentalism, because this is an area where Al-Qaeda is trying to make significant inroads, and in some areas has, for example, in the outer islands of the Philippines and large chunks of Indonesia, And look at the Bali bombing, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We had an opportunity, probably about a 12-hour window of opportunity, maybe a 24-hour window of opportunity, to be seen by the poor Muslims in that area. And I mean poor as in financially poor.
Sure.
Muslims in that area as a nation that understood Islam, has compassion for them, is not the great Satan, does not, you know, declare jihads against the brown people and support the white, you know, all that kind of. We had an opportunity, and Bush sat on his ranch clearing brush for 3 days before he said a word. He completely blew it.
Good point, Tom. Thanks a lot. Keep up the good work.
I will. Thanks, Rich. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. He completely blew it. And just absolutely and utterly, we had such an opportunity, just like we had this extraordinary opportunity on 9/11. And Bush blew that as well and ended up turning the world against us instead of with us. We really must be politically active and change this administration in 2 years. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. Free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers. Call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller. The Flight Attendants Union filed a federal lawsuit against Northwest Airlines on Tuesday for refusing to come to the bargaining table if employees were present. The Professional Flight Attendants Association is charging Northwest with violating the Railway Labor Act by keeping observers out of contract talks. Northwest is asking for major wage and benefit concessions, similar to an agreement signed by the Pilots Union in November. In that labor deal, the Airline Pilots Association took a 15% pay cut.
The strike against the Youngstown, Ohio newspaper is about to enter its eighth week with no sign that the paper's management is willing to negotiate. The 171 workers who are currently picketing the Youngstown Vindicator seeking better wages, working conditions, and health care benefits have found a great deal of support from the community.
We've had a lot of support, including a resolution supporting the Vindicator newspaper employee strike, which was passed by a vote of 7-0 by Youngstown City Council 2 weeks ago.
Deborah Shalas-Flora is vice president of the Youngstown Newspaper Guild. The striking workers see the support of the community in the print run of the Valley Voice, an alternative weekly paper started by the workers. The Voice currently has reached a print run of 51,000. In comparison, the Vindicator has a daily print run of 65,000. Also, neighboring towns have also begun to show support. A councilman in Warren, Ohio, publicly burned his Vindicator subscription card and vowed to bring a resolution supporting the workers to that city's council. Flora says that the union is ready to come back to the bargaining table when the paper expresses an interest in negotiating.
We don't have any talks scheduled at this time. We stand ready to bargain, though. It takes two sides to do the bargaining, and we've already told the company that we're willing to meet with them whenever, wherever.
Unions from around the world have reached out to help victims of the devastating December 26 tsunami. As the death toll climbs past 80,000 people, relief agencies are trying to halt the spread of communicable diseases threatening survivors. Transport workers in India have agreed to donate one day's pay and 100 workers to assist in relief measures. Also in India, the Southern Railway Union is distributing food, clothing, and medicine. The Swedish Metal Workers Union is donating $1 million and urging unions in the United States to do the same.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. After 30 years of improvement, leading indicators show a worsening environmental trend over the last 4 years. Statistics show that civil citations issued to polluters fell 57%. Criminal pollution prosecutions dropped 17%. Cleanups of toxic waste down by 52%. Fish consumption warnings for rivers doubled. Beach closing up 26%. Asthma attacks increased by 6%. On the bright side, greenhouse gas emissions were reduced by 0.5%. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Let me tell you a story of progressive progress. In 1939, two-thirds of America's senior citizens lived their golden years in cold, hard poverty. Just a decade later, that percentage was down to half. By 1959, it was only one-third, and today the number is less than 10%. That's progress.
our nation's landmark Social Security program. Yes, the very same program now under attack by Wall Street wolves and congressional opportunists of both parties who insist that Social Security is doomed to failure and facing an imminent financial crisis. Horse duties. First, this is a program that actually works, providing the modicum of income so our gray-haired citizens have a basic level of decent living when their earning years are over. Second, Social Security is a model of efficiency, requiring only a single percent in administrative costs. Compare that to the insurance corporations that suck out one-third of our health care dollars to pay for their corporate bureaucracies, executive salaries, marble palaces, and advertising. But no, cry the chicken littlers, Social Security is going broke. Hogwash. Without changing anything, Social Security is financially sound for the next 40 years. Name me a corporation that can claim that. Yet the Bushites, on behalf of Wall Street finaglers, seek to privatize this public treasure, pushing people to put their Social Security nest egg into the stock market. Hello. These are the same investment geniuses who only years ago would have advised you to invest in Enron, a stock that fell from $97 a share to 57 cents in only 1 year. This is Jim Hightower saying, I say no one should be allowed to reform Social Security unless they actually need it.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, he had it in his hands. An extraordinary opportunity George W. Bush had to say to the people of Indonesia, of Malaysia, of Sumatra, all over Southeast Asia, and Eastern India. Those places where, by coincidence, fundamentalist Islam is rising with dollars from Saudi Arabia. The Wahhabists are spreading. Islamic insurgencies happening in both Indonesia and the Philippines, big time, in Malaysia, in many other countries, small time. He had the opportunity, George W. Bush, when this disaster happened. He had the opportunity to immediately stand up and say, this is terrible. These are human beings. We must do something. We will do something. We will lead the world in helping solve this problem. We will spend as much money as we spend in, 2 days in Iraq. We'll spend $1 billion fixing this, you know, a week's worth of money in Iraq. Was it $2 billion a week we're spending? Roughly, about $100 billion a year. Yeah. Okay. We'll spend 3 days worth. But no. Instead, he didn't say anything. And a day went by, and the German chancellor canceled his vacation and went home and started raising money, and other countries raised money, and Canada put in six times what we have on a per capita basis. Norway, Germany, England. On and on the list goes. Second day goes by. Still no word. What's Bush doing? He's bicycling. He's clearing brush. Again, figure that out for the Freudians among you. This guy spends all his time cutting bushes. No, a reverse Oedipus comedy? Who knows? Anyway, he had this opportunity to bring these people into the fold, to have them perceive us as good guys who care. And the third day came, and he said, okay, we'll give $15 million. This is one-third of what he's going to spend on his inaugural ball. And we'll loan you $20 million, he says, the next day. This is nothing in the grand scheme of things. It's going to cost billions of dollars to reconstruct that area. And I'm putting this in the context not of it's the right thing to do, human beings are dying, although that's a strong argument. I'm saying even beyond that, we had a PR opportunity here. And this guy couldn't even competently do that. And in the midst of this here now, we see the Bush. This is an article by Jim Loeb, One World Net. The Bush administration's foreign policy, the headline is U.S. businesses overseas threatened by rising anti-Americanism. And if you've traveled overseas in the last couple of years, you know what I'm talking about. I gave a speech 2 years ago, the second year of the Bush administration, at Oxford University. And which is a great honor, you know, to be invited to speak at Oxford. Afterwards, the college that invited me, you know, they had this big dinner and you know, the president of the college and all these 30, 40 people in one of these. It was like something out of Harry Potter, you know, with the servants and all the china just right and, you know, this 16-course meal or whatever it was. It was extraordinary. And there was a couple of hundred students and professors in the room. And before they would allow me to speak, and I was there to speak about corporate personhood, right, a rather didactic topic, the legal status of corporations. Before they were willing to hear me speak, they wanted to know what I thought, whether or not I supported George W. Bush. And when I said, no, I'm sorry, I can't support him, I didn't vote for him, and I think his policies are harmful to the United States and the world, I got a standing ovation. And I hadn't even started my speech. So here's this news story. The Bush administration's foreign policy may be costing U.S. corporations business overseas. Brands closely identified with the U.S., such as Marlboro Cigarettes, America Online, which has now conveniently changed its name to AOL, McDonald's, American Airlines, and ExxonMobil are particularly at risk. GMI, an independent market research company, conducted the survey in 8 countries, December 10th through 12th. One-third of all consumers, one-third of all consumers in Canada, China, France, Germany, Japan, Russia, and the United Kingdom said the U.S. foreign policy, particularly the war on terror and the occupation of Iraq, constituted their strongest impression of the United States. 20% of respondents in Europe and Canada said they consciously avoided buying U.S. products as a protest against those policies. 1 out of 5, 20%. That finding was consistent with a similar poll carried out by GMI 3 weeks after Bush's November election victory. Unfortunately, says Dr. Mitchell Eggers, the GMI CEO, unfortunately, current American foreign policy is viewed by international consumers as a significant negative when it used to be a positive. Remember when everybody wanted to be an American? Everybody wanted to look like an American. Everybody wanted to wear jeans and smoke Marlboros and drink Coca-Cola and eat at McDonald's. And I mean, you know, you say, that's the schmaltziest part of our culture. Nonetheless, remember when the Chinese students carried the 36-foot-tall papier-mâché replica of the Statue of Liberty into Tiananmen Square, quoting Thomas Jefferson? It may well be that the result of 8 years of George W. Bush is that those days will be over forever. That, my friends, would be a true tragedy. Not just for our nation, but for the world as well, because I believe that the ideals that we used to champion, that we are now trampling, are ideals that the world needs. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to call in. Our website, TomHartmann.com. Drop into our chat room if you'd like. Just click the live chat link. We've got a new chat room. We've had been hosted over at the CompuServe Democratic Forum. We've moved, had problems getting into the CompuServe room. You probably won't have problems getting into this one, so try it out. Just go to TomHartmann.com and click live chat. In fact, the chat room is quite full of some of the wisest, most interesting, witty, intelligent, articulate, thoughtful, insightful folks on all of the Internet. 15 minutes past the hour. Patrick in Albuquerque, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Patrick, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
I just wanted to bring a new story to your attention. And one of the things I wanted to say, you know, to all your listeners is one of the things that sets you apart from all of the other talk show hosts, whether it's conservative, liberal, whatever, is you have that little section, you know, occasionally where caught you doing something right or caught you doing something good.
Yeah.
Well, there's a new story I saw, and, you know, because with all this stuff going on, it's so easy to get negative. And the governor and lieutenant governor of Michigan, I don't know if you heard about this or not, but they, by their own request, took a 5% pay cut to help out their state.
That's extraordinary. Jennifer Granholm, I don't know who the lieutenant governor is.
Yeah, the lieutenant governor was John Cherry. He did it also.
That's remarkable.
Isn't that wonderful? I mean, you know, politicians willing to do that?
It truly is. It truly is. Jennifer Granholm, I mean, you've got these cons out there. There's this whole movement about amend the Constitution so that Arnold Schwarzenegger can run for president. If they do that, it will make Jennifer Granholm also eligible to run for president because she was born in Canada. And she has been described by one of the callers to this program a month or two ago, called in and said Jennifer Granholm is Hillary without the baggage. And, you know, it's a nice way of saying it. Jennifer Granholm, I think, is an extraordinary person, extraordinary politician, has everything necessary to be president of the United States, except for the fact that she wasn't born here.
Right.
And it would be fascinating if the cons got that amendment passed and it got ratified by the states, and we ended up having Schwarzenegger versus Granholm. That would be
ironic, you know, if that happened?
Yeah, the gropinator against a really and truly insightful, extraordinary, articulate, attractive, frankly, woman. What a contrast, particularly if some of the seedier parts of Arnold's past came up again. Republicans always managed to bury that stuff. But, yeah. So, no, I didn't know that she'd taken a 5% pay cut.
Yeah, her and her lieutenant governor both, you know, requested it on their own, you know. I mean, you just don't hear about that. And, of course, it was, like, buried, you know, in the back pages of some newspaper, you know.
Well, I suspect it was big news in Michigan.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, possibly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, remarkable. Well, thank you, Patrick, for filling us in on that and for letting us know. And we'll, let's see, do I have my Jolly Good Fellow music here?
Keep up the good work, Tom.
Yeah, okay, all right. Thanks a lot, Patrick. I appreciate it. We got it around here someplace. Hang on just a second. Jolly, there we go. 1, 2, 3. Jennifer Granholm. Well done. 5% pay cut to help the state out. The state of Michigan is having hard times. And thank you, Patrick, for the suggestion. So, moving along, the war on CAFTA is just beginning. This is the next one. This is the next one. The free area, the free zone, Central American free trade agreement. Rather, you know, the last one was the North American free trade agreement. That was Canada, the United States, and Mexico. Now they want to extend this thing and bring in Central and South America. In particular, Central America. The accord, the late 2003-2004, the initial accord, was signed by Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua. Dominican Republic later joined, and now the United States is getting into this thing. And there are a lot of folks, social activists, trade unionists, and others, who are saying this will be a disaster and the fight is just beginning. That NAFTA has increased poverty in Mexico, increased poverty in the United States, led to a diminishment of environmental protections and regulations and labor protections in both nations and Canada as well. The net effect of NAFTA has been one thing and one thing only, and that is to make more profitable very large multinational corporations. It has not capital N, not helped We, the people, the citizens of these nations, of these three nations. And in fact, it has caused us to surrender sovereignty. We now have a situation where private corporations are suing governments. In some cases, state and local governments in the United States and other countries, suing them not just because they weren't allowed to do business because they were polluting or doing something toxic, but suing for lost profits that they didn't even make. You know, the case with MTBE, I believe it is, the gasoline additive. The case with the funeral company, the funeral home company in Canada, there was just some just incredible, mind-boggling abuses that have been litigated under Chapter 11 of NAFTA. Now they want to expand this thing into CAFTA. And there's a whole lot of folks saying, no, we are not going to take this laying down. Watch this one. This is the next battle coming up. It's 20 minutes past the hour on the True People's Radio.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet others. Listen to Tom Hartman. People who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
It's ironic. They're called answering machines, but they never give you answers. Oh, sure, they tell you so-and-so isn't here right now, but you have no idea where they went or when they'll be back. Of course, with GEICO, you won't talk to an answering machine. They have thousands of car insurance specialists standing by, so you always get answers from a real live person. No wondering, no waiting, no irony.
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And that's what you'll get here. Welcome. You're in the Truth Arena, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 24 minutes past the hour. Preston in Denver, Colorado on the line. Hey, Preston, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I want to address that that notion that we have that people in Japan or wherever, you know, wanted our jeans and our Coca-Cola and our cigarettes. You know, I think that comes about because our industries go there and disrupt local economies, and the people there are also very susceptible to our marketing techniques, just as we are.
Well, there's an element of that, Preston, certainly, and but I can tell you, I've done business in a lot of those countries, and the local marketers in Japan understand marketing just as competently and just as well as Procter & Gamble does. It's not so much that we're super successful in marketing. It's that we have been perceived, for better or for worse, and sometimes more in fantasy than in reality. But we've been perceived for over 200 years now, all around the world, as an idealized nation, as a beacon of liberty, as a great place, as good people, as compassionate people.
Yes, I think Procter & Gamble have many more resources to do that marketing. And regarding the fantasy part of it, they have a lot more resources to control those fantasies. For instance, Baywatch now is the most widely watched program across the world.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think this is coming from an indigenous desire, but from control of the media. Fox News now is moving into Latin America.
Or it could just be that you know, a lot of men in the third world like to watch scantily clad women.
Possibly. Some people are kind of offended by that. In fact, you know, part of the reason I think we went to in Iraq is that they had a lot of barriers to foreign corporations coming in. And to liberate them from those barriers, you know, we went in there and we've rewritten their economic policies and taken down barriers.
Yeah, we rewrote them in their constitution. We said that a foreign corporation can now go into Iraq and can extract 100% of all the profits they make in the country from the country, take it out of the country, boom, just like that.
Yeah.
And most countries have protectionist barriers that prevent that.
Yes. Another thing I want to comment on is another sort of network that's been developing that we might want to put some energy into. You know, in addition to all the right-wing radio networking going on, the right has also done a good job of distributing things like lectures on CD and documentaries like the Clinton Chronicles. And I found out recently that Blockbuster is owned by a close friend of Rush Limbaugh's, Wayne Huizenga.
Hmm.
I think the progressives might want to, you know, try to circulate their own documentaries.
Oh, we're certainly doing it. I mean, there was a huge when of course, this was all pre-election, and hopefully it'll continue, but a huge thing with the Outfox, when Outfox yeah. came out, and several other. Unprecedented was another good one, a Robert Greenwald movie. And people were having home, you know, parties in their houses and inviting total strangers over from their community. And out of those things sprang, at least here in Vermont, I know of, you know, discussion groups that sprang out of these things.
There's a great one that just came out called Oil on Ice. And at oilonice.org, you can find out about the, that's a documentary on the drilling in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge and alternatives to the oil that we seem to be so eager to extract from the world.
Yeah, yeah. I have a sense, and I may be wrong on this, Preston, but I hope I'm not. I have a sense that we are beginning now to not just awaken, but also to return to community. There has been, you know, and perhaps that's what happens with oppressed people, as it were, that there's this return to community, that people are getting together. I know of a couple of groups, and I've been showing up for them here in Vermont, that are getting together once a month just to discuss things, just to talk about things, discuss a book, discuss, you know, what's going on politically, things like
Fantastic.
That.
Fantastic. And I think your program helps to foster that community.
Well, it's its own type of community, and Right Wing Talk Radio has been doing that very well, and I'm trying to do it here, and I know that, you know, some of the folks on Air America, Randy Rhodes in particular, does the same thing, creating an online community, as it were, and Mike Malloy does that brilliantly as well. And there's a bunch of us out there doing that, but every one of us individually, we can all be doing this. Preston, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you. It's 29 minutes past the hour.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time. Uh-oh. All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller. The Flight Attendants Union filed a federal lawsuit against Northwest Airlines on Tuesday for refusing to come to the bargaining table if employees were present. The Professional Flight Attendants Association is charging Northwest with violating the Railway Labor Act by keeping observers out of contract talks. Northwest is asking for major wage and benefit concessions, similar to an agreement signed by the Pilots Union in November. In that labor deal, the Airline Pilots Association took a 15% pay cut.
The strike against the Youngstown, Ohio newspaper is about to enter its eighth week with no sign that the paper's management is willing to negotiate. The 171 workers who are currently picketing the Youngstown Vindicator seeking better wages, working conditions, and health care benefits have found a great deal of support from the community.
We've had a lot of support, including a resolution supporting the Vindicator newspaper employee strike, which was passed by a vote of 7-0 by Youngstown City Council 2 weeks ago.
Deborah Chalice-Flora is vice president of the Youngstown Newspaper Guild. The striking workers see the support of the community in the print run of the Valley Voice, an alternative weekly paper started by the workers. The Voice currently has reached a print run of 51,000. In comparison, the Vindicator has a daily print run of 65,000. Also, neighboring towns have also begun to show support. A councilman in Warren, Ohio, publicly burned his Vindicator subscription card and vowed to bring a resolution supporting the workers to that city's council. Flora says that the union is ready to come back to the bargaining table when the paper expresses an interest in negotiating.
We don't have any talks scheduled at this time. We stand ready to bargain, though. It takes two sides to do the bargaining, and we've already told the company that we're willing to meet with them whenever, wherever.
Unions from around the world have reached out to help victims of the devastating December 26 tsunami. As the death toll climbs past 80,000 people, relief agencies are trying to halt the spread of communicable diseases threatening survivors. Transport workers in India have agreed to donate one day's pay and 100 workers to assist in relief measures. Also in India, the Southern Railway Union is distributing food, clothing, and medicine. The Swedish Metal Workers Union is donating $1 million and urging unions in the United States to do the same.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. After 30 years of improvement, leading indicators show a worsening environmental trend over the last 4 years. Statistics show that civil citations issued to polluters fell 57%. Criminal pollution prosecutions dropped 17%. Cleanups of toxic waste down by 52%. Fish consumption warnings for rivers doubled. Beach closing up 26%. Asthma attacks increased by 6%. On the bright side, greenhouse gas emissions were reduced by 0.5%. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I get a private message here in the chat room. And by the way, please don't send me private messages, because what it does is it pops open a window that covers up my ability to see Ira's messages to me, our engineer, our show engineer, telling me who's calling. But this one says, a HARP, which I had mentioned earlier, stands for High Frequency Active Oral or Auroral Research Program. Interesting. So anyhow, I'm going to close that window because I have to. If you're going to talk to me, do it in the main chat room. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, TomHartmann.com, if you want to drop into the chat room and say hi. And I hang out there during the breaks. And the DMI 2004 Injustice Index, this is interesting, a few stats. It's the end of the year, nearly. You know, tomorrow is the end of the year. And the number of Americans who joined the ranks of the impoverished in 2004, 1.3 million. The number of times Donald Trump uttered the words, "You're fired," during the first season of Apprentice, 15. Number of Americans who have heard the words, "You're fired," since January of 2001, 1.6 million. Percentage of American households who argue about money-related topics on a regular basis, 95%. That's scary. The average take-home pay for an American worker, $517 a week in 2004. The average take-home pay for an American CEO, $155,769 a week. The share of the nation's $53 trillion debt. Now, that includes the national debt, which is pushing up against $8 trillion, plus all of the debt of all of us, corporate debt, consumer debt, all of that. Altogether, our nation is $53 trillion in debt. We used to be the largest creditor nation in the world. Used to be more nations in the world owed us money than we owed anybody else. In fact, it used to be that more countries in the world owed us money than anybody else in the world. We were the bankers to the world. We were a wealthy nation. We are rapidly becoming an impoverished nation as a result of the conservative economic policies that began with Ronald Reagan. Your share, or your household's share, of the nation's $53 trillion debt is $473,456. The number of Americans who believe a college education will be beyond the reach of most families in the future, 8 out of 10. Number of President Bush's daughters who graduated from four-year universities in June of 2004, 2 and 2. Number who joined the National Guard, 0 and 0. Number of college-qualified low- and middle-income African-American high school students who will not be able to go to college because of financial barriers, 2 and 5. Average cost of tuition at a four-year public university during the 2003-04 academic year, it increased 14%, up by $579. Number of college students who graduate with unmanageable levels of debt, 4 out of 10. The amount earned by a woman for every dollar earned by a man, 76 cents. The percentage of working women who provide half or more of the income for their families, 55%. Number of United States senators who are women, 14 out of 100. The number of viewers of the premiere episode of ABC's hit show Desperate Housewives, 21.5 million. Likelihood that an African-American family that owns a home will file for bankruptcy compared with their white counterparts, 5 to 1. 50 years after the landmark Brown versus Board of Education decision, odds of a black or Latino public high school student graduating in 4 years, 50-50. Interesting. I have a few more statistics here I'll share with you. Let's break it up with a call. Sean in Indianapolis is on the line. Hey, Sean, what's on your mind tonight?
Hey, Tom, what's going on? Hey, first of all, I wanted to tell you that you made a right-wing radio. I was listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network a couple days ago, and there's this guy that runs a show called The Intelligence Report, and he read one of your articles about what if the Cold War really was another weapons of mass destruction scam.
Oh, really? Interesting. And as some right-wing talk show host,
RVNLive.com. You know, they're right-wing, but they're not Christian right wing necessarily.
Yeah, was he quoting me or ridiculing me?
No, he was reading the article and he was in favor of it.
Interesting. Well, see, that's the thing. There are so many areas where us liberals and them conservatives are really saying the same thing.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's
really far. There's only a few there's only a few people like Rush Limbaugh and Laura Ingraham and Bill O'Reilly. The rest of the right wing that's like on RBN, they're saying the exact same things that you're saying.
Yeah, well, with some variations. But by and large, what it's coming down to is the corporatists versus the small-D Democrats. And there are a lot of, as I've pointed out on the program many times, there are a lot of, there are many principled, old-fashioned conservatives, the Dwight Eisenhower, Everett Dirksen, Barry Goldwater conservatives, who believe in democracy and the rule of law every bit as much as I do, and as liberals and progressives do, and they are not represented by the Bush administration.
Yeah, I know, and I think it's time that we all revolt, personally, but
well, how do you do that, Sean?
Another question. Of all the organizations out there that I could give to help out in Indonesia and you know, that whole part of the world,
yeah,
I just want to make sure that my money's not going to go to some major right-wing, you know, organization. Could you please run off a few good, solid organizations that I can get to?
Yeah, I'd be pleased to. I have done international relief work, and I have worked in the third world. And, in fact, I was one – here's a horror story for you. I was in Uganda during the famine in 1980, working in a famine relief center. And one of the larger Christian charities in the United States, if I named it, you would immediately recognize the name, flew in. Two guys flew in a very nice, fancy private plane, spent a day and a half there taking pictures of themselves. You know, they brought a few cases of food, and they'd sit there with a case of food, and they'd get the most desperate and terrible and pitiful looking people they could find. And they basically made this movie, and then they packed up and they flew out again and were never heard from again.
Yeah, and they have their shows on TV where they're showing giving them the food, you know,
this particular group. Yeah, this particular group truly horrified me. I have to say though is that most of these groups are very ethical and are doing the right thing. But you know, and I used to even recommend the Red Cross. I've worked with Red Cross folks, particularly from outside the United States, when we were in the Namalu prison farm in Uganda, which is the part up in the Karamoja area that we had turned into this refugee center. We had about 20,000 people, most of them dying of starvation when I was there. And there was this young woman, Anne, from the Irish Red Cross who was working there, and she was a saint. And she was killed about a week after I got there by a sniper, but it's a whole other story. But in any case, ever since Elizabeth Dole ran the Red Cross here in the United States, I've not been a big fan of theirs. But here's three organizations that I have had personal contact with out in the field, and I know that they're doing good work, and I know that their overhead is low, and that if you send them money, it will be used appropriately.
Okay.
The first is Oxfam. Oxfam is extraordinary. Oxfam in the United States, if you're donating money to Oxfam in the United States, oxfamamerica.org is the URL, www.oxfamamerica.org. The second is the American Friends Service Committee. This is an offshoot of the Quakers, and although it's not an evangelical group at all, and their website is afsc.org, as in American Friends Service Committee. And the third is Doctors Without Borders. And Doctors Without Borders, the international organization, was started in France, Médecins Sans Frontières, or however you say it in French. But the U.S. group, doctorswithoutborders.org. And there's no shortage of other good and excellent organizations. The one that I've worked with for years and years is Salem International. It's pronounced Salem International in Germany. SalemInternational.org. And we have a program in India and on the eastern side of India. It's not right up against the coast, so we didn't get whacked by the tsunami. But I just got an email this morning from Samuel Mueller, who runs the program in Germany, and he said that we are going to be participating in helping folks in that region. But I'm not sure that the website is set up for contributions, but that's saleminternational.org for that one. So those are the ones that I have personal knowledge of, where I've literally worked side by side with people from those organizations and have some knowledge of how they work on the inside, and can tell you from my own personal knowledge that they're good. Now, you know, my experience in the NGO world, non-governmental organization world, nonprofit world, is that there are far more good ones than bad ones, and the odds are most of them are fine organizations, but these are among the best in my opinion.
Okay, thank you, Tom. And I, last week, or it was either earlier, getflyer.com or something like that.
I don't recall, Sean.
You were reading about the Sun Myung Moon relation to George W.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I couldn't find that site with all that information on it. Do you happen to remember which one it was?
Boy.
I thought you were saying getflyer.com, but I couldn't find it.
No, that doesn't ring a bell. I'm sorry I don't. Every day I start the program here, we go through about 4 inches worth of paper to boil it down to about an inch worth, and that becomes the show. And then most of it gets tossed because it's just, or recycled, you know, I'd end up buried in paper. So I don't have that with me. If you go back to the White Rose Society archives, if you can remember the day, you can listen to the show and you could probably pick it out, because usually I do, you know, if I'm quoting from an article, I will always cite the title, the author, and the website or the URL if it's appropriate. So you might want to check those archives.
George W. Bush, he is really, really embarrassing this country with the lousy $35 million. That's like, what, an hour of what we spend in Iraq?
Yeah, and it's about half of what he's spending on his inaugural coronation ceremony.
Just from one thing to another, you know, there's no way that he could have been elected legitimately, because everybody hates this guy.
Well, not everybody. There's a lot of people who love George Bush. But setting that aside, the biggest problem that I have, Sean, and thank you for the call. I appreciate it. You're calling in. It's good to hear from you. The biggest problem that I have with George W. Bush with regard to this whole situation with the tsunami is not that we have been so stingy in the money that we're giving. $25 million is a lot of money. On a per capita basis, it's very little. And the New York Times pointed this out in an editorial today. How dare we, you know, George W. Bush, take people to task compared with the rest of the world, how we're giving, it's really very little. And Bush was very selective in his use of numbers. And also very often the money that he proposes he's going to give, the money that we said we were going to give Iran for the earthquake in, Lode or Toad or whatever it is, and of course the $5 billion that we were going to give Africa, it hasn't materialized. There's just, you know, we haven't written the check yet. But beyond that, my concern is that he had 3 days to seize a leadership position for the United States, not just George W. Bush. I mean, he might have actually even used it to reclaim some of his standing in the world, to cause people in the world to see him as a good guy. But here we are with the some of the most impoverished Islamic parts of the world. Islam is growing. It's the fastest growing religion in this part of the world. It is subsuming Buddhism and pantheism and the local religions and even Christianity in these areas. The Islamic evangelists are so much more successful in Southeast Asia right now. Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world, and the radical, virulent, toxic form of Islam, The variation of Sunni Islam known as Wahhabism, which has been exported from Saudi Arabia for 40-some-odd years now, as a result in large part of the deal with the devil that the House of Saud made with Mr. Wahhab, that this form of Islam is growing in Southeast Asia, particularly in Indonesia. Look at the bombing in Bali, in Malaysia. Throughout the region, and indeed even along in parts of the eastern coast of India, and particularly in Sri Lanka. The last time I was in Sri Lanka many years ago, but the last time I was there, the insurgency was just beginning. It was the Tamil Tigers up in the north in Kandy. They were shooting people when I was there, and the city called Kandy, I believe it's spelled with a K. And it was an Islamic insurgency. Well, it was also a regional, tribal, nationalistic insurgency, but there was, the, you know, Islam had tainted it. And here we had an opportunity. We, the United States, and George W. Bush had an opportunity to, within moments, within hours, certainly, of this disaster, to step out there, and even if it was just words, to seize the moral high ground, to encourage the world to rally around, to, you know, ask that the UN convene a special session to do something about this. I mean, there's so many things that could have been done symbolically that would have cost nothing. And instead, what did he do for 3 days? Not one word. All we hear out of the so-called ranch, George W. is afraid of horses, so there's not, I'm not, I don't know why he calls it a ranch. There's no horses there. But in any case, the former pig farm down there in Texas, all we heard out of it is that he's cutting down brushes. He's cutting down bushes. Right? Cut a bush here, cut a bush there, cut another bush. 3 days, and finally he says something. And we blew it. We missed an opportunity to bring these guys to our side. It's so sad. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots, organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
The Clean Air Act is due for an update, according to the author of a new book about air. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. President Kennedy signed the Clean Air Act into law in 1963. Author Joe Sherman says a number of factors made it politically possible to pass a federal law attacking pollution, a subject that until then had been left to the states. Sherman is the author of a new book called Gasp, The Swift and Terrible Beauty of Air. He says air pollution had killed 4,000 people in London over a four-day period in 1952. Then Rachel Carson published Silent Spring, a book that helped spark the modern environmental movement.
Silent Spring, Carson's book, gave Kennedy a lot of boost. It brought air issues into the public agenda. And Kennedy really pushed the first Clean Air Act through. It didn't have a lot of enforcement muscle. It took until 1970 for that to happen.
The act was amended again in 1977 and 1990. But Sherman says problems have arisen over the last 14 years that should prompt another look at the law.
It has not been amended again, but it struggles to kind of deal with the air pollution situation America keeps making bigger. It has a lot of very good features to it. But it basically is an institutional device, has fallen behind the kind of extent of the pollutants we have. It doesn't deal at all with global warming, which now has become, I call it the big worry in my book. It's particularly indicative of how our institutions have failed to keep up with the realities of pollution.
Sherman says global warming, caused in part by air pollution, could become the biggest force of change humans have ever had to face. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Like a bird on a wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free.
Oh my. That's got to be Johnny Cash. I believe it's a remarkable. But 5 minutes before, you can tell I used to be a DJ. It was 35 years ago, but old habits die hard. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour, coming up on 4 minutes before the hour. And by the way, folks in the chat room corrected me, or helped me correct myself. Pantheism is not the primary religion that you find in these areas. It's animism. Animism, the belief that everything around you is filled with life and has its own spirit, as opposed to pantheism, which is more like, you know, the Greek, you know, the pantheon. There are a series of gods that are disconnected from, but anyhow. Into the House when Congress convenes on Tuesday could include a plan that would require a majority vote of the ethics panel to pursue a formal investigation. Now a deadlock on the panel, which is evenly split between parties, keeps a case pending. The possible change, the aide said, would mean that a tie vote would effectively dismiss the case. So here we've got Tom DeLay. Now, three times he's been admonished by his peers for ethical lapses. Several members of his staff are facing hard time in prison for felonies, and he may be as well. And so what are they doing? Well, down in Texas, they're trying to change the law under which he was indicted in Texas State Republican Legislative Society. By the way, White Rose and RadioPower.org. Click the donate button, will you? Thanks to you for listening and the folks in our chat room. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage